space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one but four separate chat rooms, as well as say hello over there to Wolf Spirit Radio and People for People Network. If you want to go over and visit with People for People, then scroll down there. If you're on the Super Chat Room, scroll down there and click on the banner link that says People for People Radio. That'll take you right over there to their website. So anyway, I got to looking into RAM air induction and got my mind to thinking about a lot of stuff. But before I get into all that, Stephen Gibbons posted a link in the chat room down there, and it's a pretty nifty tune. I'm going to go ahead and play for you. So stay tuned.
Japan, could they have really planned it? Heading for the iceberg like the Titanic.
Atlantic mystery, Atlantis wife of mystery. The truth about the pyramids and ancient Mayan prophecy.
Space Odyssey, look into the anomalies, and you will find suppression of free energy technology. A false democracy born out of a monopoly. Sacred knowledge robbery, like the towers they toppling.
No stopping free.
Jay Brain, we don't see.
Coming from the enemy.
Free energy. The oil's running dry. Our money's burning out.
Solar panels on the roof of the White House.
Hey! We bringing on some real change.
Water catchment system.
We collecting rain.
Time to gather round. The moment's now. I want it all turned out. And from the crowd, be the one.
Perceive the earth as a conductor of acoustical resonance, and still his presence lives in the heart of visionary invention.
Over 5,000 patents censored.
Researching zero point energy, trying to get through delirium. The unified field theory of Nassim Harriman, and every day we carry in the burden of our past. Water fuel bars, we no longer need the gas.
So many solutions right here in your face. Raw earth energy, create what rejuvenates. Green walls and green roofs, grow plants on everything. Magnetic movements, don't need gas for anything. Space reach rockets, doing our own research. Paying out of pocket, bike powered stages. You pedal in our rocket, fully access to techie knowledge. Green power over big profit, you can't stop it.
Ever think what the wars are fought for? Ever dream that the world could be more? I spend my life on Earth, one chance to do it together. Ever think what the wars are fought for? Ever dream that the world could be more?
Third industrial revolution. Invention is the language of a worldwide solution. The body electromagnetic, plasma arc reactor, stubble field, calcium frost. Free the knowledge lost.
Some people wait for 2012 to watch the earth shift. But in New Mexico, they out there building earth ships. We got the language wrong. I got a new twist. The lifting of the veil, that's the true apocalypse.
Some see free energy as the enemy. But my genetic memory, remembering that that could never be. Thoughts float in the anti-gravity. A cubic foot of space can fuel the whole world annually.
You can choose a love or hate, revolt or maybe meditate. And every day we demonstrate so we can finally get it straight. Peace worldwide is the anthem that we celebrate. Free energy like the end of the movie Saint.
Time to gather round. The moment's now. I want it all turned out. And from the crowd, be the one.
Name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, I can describe the ruckus. So, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. Says right up at the top of this deal, nature needs no improvement, only arrogance of man requires change. And I said just about on everything from my YouTube channel to this one right here, says I aim to prove energy is free. And, you know, crazy thing is, it's not even a secret that energy is free. And it really never has been a secret that energy is free. It's just that the average Joe just doesn't understand that they have access to that free energy just by understanding a little bit of physics and a little bit of science and understanding how things work. It's not this holy grail unicorn that we're looking for. It's been around since the dawn of time. You know, nature's been doing some pretty amazing things for who knows how many thousands of years. And so with that said, you know, you got massive forces such as earthquakes and tidal waves and tsunamis and tornadoes and hurricanes and even the power of the sun. You got so many different possibilities for power consumption, everything from thermoelectrics to static electrics to, you know, whatever. It's just, it boggles my mind that we're still talking about this. I'm going to try again to get a convention together, a free energy convention. I'm going to try one last time to try to gather the dream team, so to speak. People who want to work on some projects and see them all the way through. The concept of free energy, it seems to be like a taboo kind of thing. If you go up and you Google up the laws of thermodynamics, which I will right now so that I can get a really good, I'm going to do this real quick. Thermal dynamics. And if you read the laws of thermodynamics, it seems like it's more of a roadblock than anything else. It seems like every one of those doggone laws that they put up there basically try to convince you that there's losses in the system. And so with that said, that you know, things like zero point or over unity, free energy, is not possible in a closed loop system. They've been doing this pretty much trying to convince people for forever and a day. That's not possible. But I don't think that even the ones that actually were involved in writing this particular law of physics, I don't think they really understood. I don't think they understood the physics themselves. I don't think they understood basic science. Sitting here trying to look, there's one part, I'm looking on a Wikipedia article, but there's one part that just drives me insane every time I see it. I might have to Google something else. Let's see that. Free energy, I'll do that one. Anyway, free energy. And see what Wikipedia says about that one. There we go. All right. So, you get all these nifty words on there, like pseudoscience. Free energy devices, a hypothetical perpetual motion device that creates energy, thereby contradicting the laws of thermodynamics. And that's what I was trying to get into. the laws of thermodynamics. Basically, Wikipedia, if you go on there and you try to write an article saying that free energy is real, they will edit it. They will delete it. They will ensure that they will never let you put that on there. Because these folks, for some reason or another, believe themselves to be, gods of knowledge or some sort of craziness. But I hate the word pseudoscience because it drives me nuts. Because these folks out there who claim to be real scientists, they'll tell you that they can look out in the sky at a little light out there in the sky, and they can tell you that this is a star, and by the number of times that this thing blinks, can tell you that there's something around it, and then they can tell you by the wobble that this little light might make that there's a certain pattern that these are all going around, and what size the planets are all out there. Not one of these scientists have ever been close enough to this to use the true scientific observation. They've ascertained all of this from lights and light spectrums. They basically could take and look at any particular light, and they can tell you by the color of that light what minerals are on said imaginary planet out there millions of light years away. So far, in fact, that you can actually see it through a telescope, but you'd never get there in a lifetime because our technology is not advanced enough to actually send us there. And yet, they call people like myself pseudoscience, which is pretty ridiculous. And so, the amazing claims made by the mainstream science we can send something all the way to Pluto, take a picture of it, send that picture all the way back. We can send machines to Mars, and we can land on asteroids and comets and stuff like that, and we can do all these things in space, but yet we can't resolve this whole free energy deal. They always talk about clean, renewable, alternative energy sources. There's been clean, renewable, alternative energy sources right underneath everyone's nose this whole entire time. The Earth is covered in 3/4 water. Water is the most stable molecule on this planet. It's also the most destructive molecule on this planet. And it's the most powerful molecule on this planet. And separated, it's hydrogen and oxygen, so both of which are fuel sources. And it's incredible that, you got to have two, it takes too much energy to get this apart so that you can use this, and you can't get enough on demand. All the lies and propaganda that comes out of hydrogen technology is just flat out ludicrous. They say that the free energy violates the laws of thermodynamics, which is pure ridiculousness because they don't even understand thermodynamics. We know that we can boil water and we can get steam. We know that in that process, we know what's going to occur in that process. Whatever container we're boiling the water in is going to get heat, and that heat will then in turn radiate out away from the container itself, and it will also heat the inside of the container where the water is. And the longer you heat it, the more excited the water molecules become until they finally get so hot they begin to break apart and produce a gas and essentially steam. Smaller, tinier little droplets. Microscopic droplets. And then at a certain point, if it's got pressure, you can actually crack the hydrogen and oxygen. And in the process of cracking that hydrogen and oxygen, it releases an electrical charge. And actually, on the recombination of the hydrogen and oxygen, according to science, it releases an electrical charge. Because water doesn't like to be separated. It doesn't like to be messed with. But nonetheless, Water is not only life-giving force, it's a powerful force. There's so many things that you can do with water, it's just incredible. And yet, the most perfect fuel source that is in existence in our realm that we live in is not one that we take advantage of outside of old technology such as steam generation. We'll make steam boilers where we have to burn coal in order to get the reaction to boil the water, to pressurize the vaporize the water into steam and then pressurize it and use that hot steam pressure to turn turbines and then turn generator heads and so on down the line. And so we go through all that process using old style technology, and then a little bit more advanced technology where we would actually use depleting uranium, highly refined radioactive rods that we compress together. We put them in centrifuges and we get the most radioactive particles out of the soil, and then we compact them together into a ceramic rod. And so this is all crammed together and they don't want to be together, and so it will begin to release its energy. And then that energy release then in turn goes through the water molecule, which is a dipole molecule, has a positive and a negative side, so it causes it to rock really fast. And it produces friction, which in turn produces heat, and eventually we'll get to the boiling point and then into superheated steam, and then it will turn turbine. So you've got two different ways to boil water. You're going to use the coal or you're going to use the nuclear power. And so, with that said, it's really, in my mind, it's really ridiculous. This whole entire deal. You can boil water into steam. You can use that steam pressure to turn a turbine. So we know that with this with these two things right here, we can do this with water and we can get this reaction. Every single law of physics. It doesn't matter which one you're talking about. The entire law of thermodynamics is a complete and utter waste of time and space in your brain. Said pseudoscience, free energy device, a hypothetical perpetual motion device that creates energy, thereby contradicting the laws of thermodynamics. Free energy suppression conspiracy theory, in which advanced energy technologies are suppressed by governments or special interest groups. Now, why is that not even plausible? I mean, why would it even be a theory? It's reality. Reality is that if you're selling gasoline, you obviously don't want anybody to know that water is a better fuel and that it's not a pollutant as the so-called fossil fuels. And they'll even tell you all kinds of scary things like we're going to run out of fuel one day and we're going to, have wars over water and everything like that. Why would you want to not use water as a fuel? There's a lot of people that say, we got to have so much fresh water because we're all going to die of thirst because you only got so much fresh water. I hear the ridiculousness so often that it just gives me a headache. I don't understand why it is this world is so incredibly ignorant to reality. There's other links down here on this particular free energy Wikipedia page, but I'm not even going to go into that anymore because it's basically one of the ways that they like to keep people thinking, it's not possible. And the scary thing about it is there's a lot of brilliant individuals out there that went to school to learn science and technology and engineering, and yet they can't seem to get it. They can't seem to get past the laws of thermodynamics. Even though if you understood actually what was going on with every single material out there, there ain't nothing on this planet that could not be used as fuel, quite literally. You know, there's a lot of talk about biofuel, you know, biodiesel, and yet it's not something that's mainstream. There's a lot of people out there complaining that their lakes are getting covered with algae, and they can't understand why it is that the lakes are getting covered with algae. It's all nature off balance on one side of the fence, and the water runs over there and makes the water in the pond or the lake really super highly nutrient rich and mixed with whatever other chemistry that mankind likes to dump into the waterways. And they can't understand why it is that things are the way that they are. You know, I'm sitting here, I'm trying to find something in this laws of thermodynamics that's even worthy of even talking about. If you understand physics, and you understand basic science, and you take a look at any machine with a different eye, then you can find ways that you can actually fix these machines to be more efficient. Raymond and Jermaine is going to be working on the two-stage oscillator. The two-stage is a power source that we can use to hook stuff up. The two-stage is a motor, or you can power. I just blew that one out of the water. So, what did I miss there? It's like grasshopper. It only took about 10 messages in the chat room to get that one figured out. Anyway, so what am I babbling about? Basically, it's a free energy has never been a secret. The companies out there that used to make kerosene way back in the day used to dump gasoline on the ground until they realized that they could figure out a way to use it, and then it suddenly became worth something again. So at one point in time, gasoline was worthless. They just wanted the kerosene for the lamps. Then when they figured out how powerful it was, and what they could actually do with it, and they figured out how that they could actually harness the power of that combustion, that explosion occurs. And somebody like Henry Ford put together an engine. And there we go. Well, here we are in modern day. Looks like somebody calling me up. All right, who dropped the bomb?
That was your main.
All right, well, welcome, we're live. Jermaine just brought the entirety of the mad scientist closet into the room or something.
Yeah, I've had a couple of times myself, man. Hey, you were talking about the two-stage oscillator. What Jermaine was trying to say in the chat room there is that two-stage oscillator, a lot of people think it generates electricity or it pumps water. No. The two-stage oscillator is a motor. It is a power source. You can hook anything to it. You can hook a water pump. You can hook a fan to it and blow air. You can lift weights and drop it and turn it into a hammer. You can hook a turbine to it to pump, like I said, pump water.
Yeah,
you can hook a generator to it to make electricity. It is a motor.
Yeah, but what I want to get to on that particular deal is that that if you have understanding of basic physics, leverage, that, like, for example, I can see this big rock and I can go over and try to pick it up with my body, and I cannot pick this rock up because I'm not strong enough. I'm not physically strong enough to pick that rock up. But if I put a fulcrum or a fulcrum point or a block or something like that, a wedge of wood, and I got a big old long pipe, I can stick that up underneath that rock and put it on there, and I can stand way at the end with one arm and I can lift that rock up off the ground.
Right.
And so that's what you're trying to explain about your two-stage oscillator, is by understanding the physics of leverage and gear ratios and such like that, you essentially created a motor. And
exactly. And the thing is, it's a motor that can be driven by weights just like a grandfather clock.
Yeah.
And you can take your bed and raise it up in the air. You'd say, for example, your bed weighs 50 pounds. You have a block and tackle so that a two-part line, so you're only pulling 25 pounds. You raise your bed up 20 or 25 feet, maybe 30 feet in the air. You climb your ladder, you crawl a bit, and you get a really good night's sleep and produce electricity or pump water into your rice fields. That's my point with the two-stage oscillator. It is a motor that you can drive it, use it. Your power source is a weight. Your body, while you're sleeping, you can be pumping water into your rice fields. You don't have to be out there during the day in the hot sun. You see my point?
Yeah, well, once again, some more, even more verification about free energy. I'm, you know, that word right there, free energy, is just, it's probably a hindrance to trying to get common sense out there in the real world about, you know, everybody keeps saying they want clean, renewable, alternative energy sources. Well, we've had those clean, renewable, alternative energy sources forever and a day, and they're not even a secret. It's not even a secret that the elite of the world have even been able to hide, because it actually exists. Every once in a while, you'll get a quick view of something like that. Like if you share your two-stage oscillator with somebody, when you try to explain it to them, to the average Joe, it's not classified as free energy, because you actually got to put some work to it, right? But
it takes a lot of money and a lot of time to build one and build it properly.
Sure.
And it's not once it's built. The thing is about it, it's so big and so heavy and so indestructible that you could take a hailstorm with baseball-sized hail and pounding on this thing, and all it's going to do is scratch the paint.
Yeah, but see, what I was trying to get to is that device right there, if you understand basic science and basic physics, you could expand so far on that doggone deal. Like, for example, like you tell me how you could, when you put your finger up on this one lever, and you could push this lever, and you could sit there all day long and just push that lever, and it only took a certain amount of pressure in order to get that to lift that 60 or 80 pound weight off the other end over there, and on as it's falling back down, gravity, you know, you could actually be using that to produce electricity. But even if you took an external outside source, such as a little windmill that could actually put out that much force that you're actually doing with your finger, and so every time the wind's blowing, that thing's running by itself.
Okay, the actual conundrum of the two-stage oscillator is, the bigger you build it, the more power it puts out, but the less power per unit of power out it takes to put in it.
Well, there you go, and that's the example I was like trying to get to, because even when it's raining outside, you have a force that's happening while it's raining. You know, you have a force, you know, when it's windy, you have a force when it's raining, and there's other, you know, forces that are electrical that could be turned into mechanical that, you know, like the average person that watches a free energy video will say, well, you know, that's all well and good, but that's not going to run my house. Well, no, not on that scale. There's no way it's going to run your house, and maybe even by itself it's not going to run your house, but if you understand basic science and basic physics, and the simplest fact is all we are doing is moving energy from one place to the next.
Right.
according to their own laws of physics. We haven't created anything. We can't destroy anything. That all we do is change that energy from one frequency range to the next, or you know, one type from like a liquid to a gas. Even a liquid is energy. I mean, even in its self state, just liquid, just water. Water just sitting there is energy. If you bump that container that has that water, you'll produce a wave, and that wave will come back and forth, and it'll do its thing. And all you have to do every so often is just bump that water. You know, they got these generators that they put out there on the seashore, and every time the waves are coming in and out, it's hitting this little paddle, pushing it back and forth, and it's producing electricity.
Exactly, yes.
How is that not free energy? Because somebody had a basic understanding of basic science and physics, and they were able to make this doggone thing to be able to charge. You should have those all over the coastline, because the water is constantly coming in and out, you know, all the time.
Exactly.
And it's not something that, you know, would have to be environmentally dangerous. If you understand the chemistry of what's going on in the water, you know what not to put in that water.
Right.
So there's where the frustration lies. Hi, Ted. How's it going? You're live. You still there? I don't know. Maybe he's got his microphone muted.
Sure did. The thing about the Tucson also out here in my yard, it produces, and Jermaine's here with me, and he's actually operating the machine himself.
Cool.
Exactly what everyone I've ever had come here and visit with me and actually put their hands on and operate the machine, it floors them. It flabbergasts them. I mean, to the most ignorant of them. When I say ignorant, I'm not talking about stupid, I'm talking about people that don't know, okay? Ignorant people to extremely intelligent people, very smart, that understand physics, understand science, they operate the machine and it blows them away. It's unbelievable. The thing produces 1/10 of a horsepower. Okay? That doesn't seem like a lot. The average man can produce 1/10 of a horsepower for an hour or two. But the two-stage oscillator, an 8-year-old child can operate this for 8 hours straight without getting tired. That's my point. I mean, you take an 8-year-old kid, put him in a chair and hook him to it. He can sit there and read, play his video game, do whatever he wants, and actually operate the machine.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't take any thought. You just sit down in the chair and play your video games and operate the machine, making electricity or pumping water. Like I said, it's not an electric generator. It is a motor.
Cool. Hey, Raymond, I'm going to hang this call up, and I'm going to call you back because we're trying to have somebody else in here, but they are having a trouble here. So I will call you back direct.
Good.
All right. Do 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 do. We're trying to line out some people here, folks. Yeah. Let's see if we get everybody.
Hey,
Ted, how's it going? You're live, man. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, brother.
All right, cool. I'm going to add Raymond back into the call. I think what was going on was we had that whole entire chat room for Mad Science in there, so that probably did it. Let me get Raymond.
All right.
If I can find him on the doggone list. I just had him. There he is. Okay. Let's see if we can get him back in here. So anyway, Raymond was explaining his two-stage oscillator. If we can get him back online here. But anyway, folks, I think we got you back, Raymond. Can you hear? Ted's in here, too. Say hi to Ted.
Hey, partner. How's it going?
Good, Raymond. How you doing?
Oh, fantastic. I've got my little buddy here, my unadopted son, Jermaine, from the Netherlands. I mean, this kid, he's amazing. The only thing that really ticks me off is not my own blood son. I love this kid. 17 years old, got 2 years of college behind him. He is an absolute genius.
So, folks, basically, I started this show off, and when I very first got started, I was actually going to talk about ram air induction, And it kind of took on a different life and a direction because Stephen posted a song in there that I played about free energy, which is a pretty good song. But as I'm listening to the lyrics like I always do when I listen to music, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, these folks out here, they know about free energy. And they think that the world is suppressed to free energy, but what they don't understand is free energy has never been a secret. It hasn't even been a, it still isn't a secret. It's not a secret to the oil industries. It's not a secret to the electrical industries or any of them folks. They know it's for real. I mean, for Pete's sake, they sell it to you all the time. You know, and then you got individuals out there that believe that we're going to run out of resources, and so, you know, we got to go to war over oil and all that kind of jazz. I got news for you people. There ain't no physical possible way that we will ever, ever, ever run out of crude oil. This whole deal about oil crisis and scarcity and all that kind of stuff is the biggest, craziest hockahooey in the history of hocksahooey. You know, yeah. We talk about biofuel. You can turn anything biological into fuel. You know, it just about anything on this planet could be used as fuel. And like the algae problem that we discussed on a prior show, you know, they can't understand why they got algae in their lakes and ponds and stuff. And it's because they don't understand basic science.
You know, we've discussed algae before, Shazam. 1 acre growing algae will produce 6,000 gallons of diesel fuel a month.
Well, that's the whole thing, and inadvertently...
1 acre of corn...
Inadvertently, our farmers out there...
Alcohol a year.
Yeah, I get it, but inadvertently... Our farmers out here in the United States, they're out there, they're using anhydrous ammonia, and they're using cow manure and fertilizers and all kinds of chemistry out there in that that field. And they got that field soil all real nutrient rich and everything. And then when it rains, that nutrients wash down and it goes into a pond, and it has that pond water now is all nutrient rich. And plants like duckweed and watermill can grow, you know, at astronomical rates. They double every 24 to 48 hours, whatever you got. So you know that intentionally, you can grow duckweed and watermill and algaes intentionally in a pond area, and it will double itself every 24 to 48 hours. So, it's an unlimited fuel source. Because the farmer didn't understand what he was doing, he knows how to grow his crops, and he wasn't intentionally trying to pollute. It's all natural, it's all biological what they're using, you know, like cow manure, or, you know, the only difference is the anhydrous ammonia, where they're trying to add more nitrogen to the soil. But nonetheless, he knows he's making that soil as nutrient rich as possible so that they can get a good healthy crop. But the drawback is for him to get a good healthy crop means that your pond gets destroyed by, you know, an overgrowth of duckweed and watermill. But right there, he gave you a power source, he gave you a food source, and a filtration system for your pond. If you know how to use it properly.
There's a dairy farmer in the Netherlands that for the past 20-25 years has been using his cow manure to make methane gas to heat his house and cook his food in the wintertime.
Yeah.
But again, when he gets through making the methane gas, he has pure liquid fertilizer to pump out on his fields to grow the grass for the cattle to eat. I mean, the man's been doing this for 25 years.
Well, see, here's the thing. That's why I said this isn't a new concept. This word free energy, it's not a new concept. This is going around. It's right there in your face. What some people see is a natural disaster, I see as a potential in order to make something, you know, better. And if you could get everybody at the same table to understand that, look, we know that this farmer can cause this, and how can we turn that into a plus? You could take every single farmer's, you know, field run it off into specified areas and deliberately grow algae and duckweed in there to make biofuels that the farmer could then in turn around and safely run in his tractors.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes,
so he's making his own fuel and the crops at the same time. It's a plus. And now that you know that this is going on, that means that that runoff isn't going to end up in your pond and destroying your fish and your ecosystem in there. So,
you know,
just by management.
I brought it once before. I mean, every give or take a year, every 7 years, you have what's called an algae bloom in the Gulf of Mexico. And it's red algae.
Yeah.
And it's so thick. It starves out the oxygen in the water and destroys the shrimping industry. And all the shrimping people in Florida and the southern parts of the United States, Alabama and Mississippi and so forth, they complain about this algae bloom. Where really and truly, if they just went out there and harvested it, they would have enough diesel fuel to run their boats during the years that the algae bloom wasn't there. And they're not even having to grow it. It's wild. It's free. It's free! Go get it!
That's what. You just hit the nail right on the head!
And one more thing that really, really ticks me off is this biodiesel bullcrap. Biodiesel is nothing more than taking what is there and changing it and making it look more difficult than it really is so somebody can make money off of it.
Well,
look, biodiesel is nothing more than vegetable oil. And algae is nothing more than a vegetable plant that has vegetable oil in it. And you don't need to make it into biodiesel. You just simply filter it and run it in a diesel motor. Now, the only reason that they come up with this biodiesel bullcrap is the fact that in cold weather up north, like Canada and so forth, in the winter time, it has a tendency to gel up. Well, all you have to do is heat it. You don't have to put diesel fuel with it. You don't have to put lye with it. You don't have to put this crap with it, that junk. I mean, go to the store and buy a gallon of vegetable oil, and in warm weather, pour it in your fuel tank. Don't mix it with diesel. It's raw vegetable oil. It will run your diesel engine.
Well, there you go, man. You there, Ted?
Raymond.
Yes, sir.
I don't know. I stepped away from the phone for a second, but I don't know if you all mentioned. I'm pretty sure that the inventor of the diesel engine made it to run on sunflower oil.
Yes.
Like it was the original diesel engines ran real good on oil. That was what they were made to run on.
90% of all of your farm equipment in China has been running on diesel, vegetable oil since the end of World War II. 90% of all farm equipment is diesel and it runs on vegetable oil and has for 70 years.
So with that said, then how can industry and the world all be sitting there still trying to convince everybody that we're ever going to run out of fuel? You see what I'm saying?
Because the ordinary person is not stupid, but they are ignorant of science. And so the people that want to make money convince them, go, oh, it's not that easy. You got to do this and you got to do that. No, you don't. It is that easy.
Yep.
I postulate, though, is that the entire temperance movement and the banning of alcohol was all because of until they could get the carburetor down to burn better on gas because people were running too much moonshine through their cars. I don't believe that it was about just a bunch of people upset in cities that their men were being mean because they were drunk and then that wanted to ban alcohol for a couple years. I looked into it a little bit. I actually believe they banned it so that, you know what I'm saying about the car. They tightened down the.
The real reason that a few years back, 10, 15 years ago, that you could not run alcohol in your gasoline engine is because your neoprene seals in your carburetor, the alcohol would tear it up. Well, now they've come out with different plastics. The alcohol does not mess. You can run your car on strict, pure 100% alcohol if you want to.
Well, here's the thing. The doggone moonshiners, they used to put it in the gas tank. They put it straight in the gas tank, and if they could drive over to the other place and dump it out real quick, then they would actually be able to sell it. But if the revenuers ever got behind them, All they'd have to do is outrun them and run that tank of gas, and all the evidence was gone.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Alcohol, well, one proof is a half a percent. So 200 proof is 100%. Alcohol and water, 140 proof or 70% alcohol, 30% water will run an automobile engine.
Well, you know what? I've been saying this forever and a day, that you could run an internal combustion engine specifically designed. Now, keep in mind, it's specifically engineered to run on pure distilled water. See, the whole deal right there, you know, people don't understand that there's actually water in your gasoline. There's actually water in your diesel. So they don't call it hydrocarbons for nothing. But nonetheless, if you understand the physics of water, and you understand how powerful the two separate elements of water is, you can specifically engineer an engine, an internal combustion engine, to run off of that as fuel. But the thing is, nobody ever took it that far. You know, we have induction heating, which means that essentially you, whatever metal you put in it, between that coil of wire, you can get that metal get red hot. Now, we also have copper tubing that we could use as well, or even stainless, which is even better. But as far as the conduction part, you use the copper tubing for more electron flow. But nonetheless, you can circulate water through that tube at the same time while you're heating whatever you're heating on the inside of it. So now you know you can actually build a cylinder that is surrounded by a coil of tubing that you're circulating water through, and by using a ZVS driver to pulse a frequency of electricity into that, you can actually get that induction heater to heat that cylinder, to preheat that cylinder for you. And so, specifically designed, you take this water, which is a liquid, you start to heat it up, and you're starting to pre-treat this water before it ever even gets into the system. And so by the time the water gets hot, we know that water will boil at 212 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's part of basic science. It's part of basic physics. We know that any temperatures above that, it will flash into steam. And so if you pre-treat this water, you get it warm, you run it through a coil that's actually going around the cylinder, and then by the time it gets over there to before it goes into the intake, it's already turned into steam. So it's no longer a liquid anymore. So that portion, what they say, that you can't use water as fuel because water can't be compressed because it's a liquid. Well, we're past liquid now. We're in the gas state. And so you take that water now that is turned into steam, which is a gas, and now it's compressible as well as it is able to be broken down yet even farther. So you take it in through an atomizer, which is going to smash it down even farther. And then you take it into a vaporizer that's going to break it down yet even farther. And by the time that that water gets around to already preheated 300 degrees Fahrenheit cylinder, the moment you inject that into that cylinder, what do you think is going to happen?
Turn the tank, get a lot of pressure, and run the motor.
There you go. And that's basic science. But man, I tell you, I have argued with some of the best auto mechanics out there that could quite literally, because they have access to the tools and they have understanding of an internal combustion engine, they could quite literally, from the ground up and raw materials, build an engine and make it run. But what they can't get past is the so-called laws of thermodynamics, and that is what sticks them to the point where they have to argue till they're blue in the face, and they just can't understand that if you understood the laws of thermodynamics for real, then you'd understand, first off, that they're nothing more than a boat anchor, and that's the only holding mankind back. But if you understood laws of physics, and you understood basic science, and you knew what you can do with water, like we've known what we can do with water. We've been boiling water into steam with coal, wood, nuclear radioactive rods, And we have been boiling water into steam, which turns it into a pressurized gas, which then in turn turns turbines that turns generator heads, which gives us our electricity. And yet, you can't take it any farther past that. Are you serious?
Well, she says, is the law of thermodynamics the same as the Maxwell's equations?
To what extent?
Is the law of thermodynamics, is that the same as Maxwell's equations? Did Maxwell write those, the law of thermodynamics?
Oh, I can't even remember. I'm sitting here looking at a Wikipedia article.
I think they're also known as Maxwell's equations. Is that dude Maxwell? I think he came up with this thermodynamics.
I think you're right.
The way I understand it is this dude was like a genius, right? He was like really smart. And he was doing like really weird math in his head. And what I understand, I don't know if it's true, but the way I understand it is that dude was doing like quaternion math. And like that was like 100 years ago or whenever. And the way I understand it is like they had to simplify that into vector math to put it into engineering. And when they did that, in his original writings, it allows for the vacuum or the space around to provide that energy, but when they take it and make it into a vector with X, Y, and Z, it takes out the atmosphere. So that's why they think, from what I understand, I listen to that Tom Bearden, he'd be saying, like, I'm thinking, I understand that. It's like, well, if you want to rip out the atmosphere, the earth, everything around us, the vacuum, then you can't get X, Y, and Z to give you anything out. But if you put that back in and you say, well, look, there's a vacuum around us, there's gravity around us, there's magnetism, everything around us, then you can see where X, Y, and Z, that you can actually get more energy out of an event, not more, but it was already there for the taking to begin with. And that's why Tesla was all about the collapse of the field,
yep.
And, you know, shutting down. He saw, well, look what the atmosphere gives you to your wire, your electrons when you drop it, when you cut it.
Yeah.
And so I actually don't believe that it violates the law of thermodynamics at all.
Well, it, you know, don't. It don't, because what they're trying to say is a closed loop system. You can't get out more energy than you put in. That's understandable. I don't care about that. But what energy we have access to, just like you mentioned, Tesla proved there's a whole lot more energy there than you think there is. But the key is that if you got a closed loop system and you're calling it perpetual motion or whatever, they say that the laws of thermodynamics, you know, there's so many losses in the system because of this, is that's why you can't ever, you know, get perpetual motion. But what they don't realize is that when you're talking about like what the Earth has been doing for God knows how many thousands of years, and the wind blowing and the sun blowing, I don't care if it's got a solar panel connected to it. If that thing runs for 20 years, it's perpetual motion as far as I'm concerned. It's continuing to go under its own power because it's part of the same system that we're all in. You see what I'm saying here?
Well, that makes perfect sense.
Well, that's the whole deal. And so when it comes down to laws of thermodynamics, you, as a use for it, why you can argue that you can't, build an internal combustion engine because of all these different losses. Well, if you understand those losses, then you know how to control those losses, just like with lens effect. If you know what causes the lens effect, like when you induce a current of electricity through a coil of wire, you produce a magnetic field. We know that, all right? And then when that field collapses, that energy just goes back in the opposite direction. Well, when we're trying to drag power off of that collapsing field as it's is expanding and collapsing, and we actually put a light bulb in there as our load, the moment that light bulb is introduced to that, it sends that energy right back to the same generator you're trying to pull power off of, which produces a second magnetic field that they call the lens effect. And it will actually, the more of a path that you give that electron to flow, the harder that field becomes, and it will literally become a break on that armature. And so all these forces of nature are strictly trying to balance themselves back out. They want to be back at rest, just like they were before you messed with them. When you blow up a balloon, and you let that balloon go, you're going to get the same amount of pressure out of that balloon that you put into that balloon. And that's all you need to know. Same thing with nature. You're not adding to or taking away from any process that's going on in nature. All you're doing is allowing that powerful force to do work for you in the process. And that's why these folks out there just can't seem to get it through their head that free energy is for real. You see what I mean? Did I lose you?
No.
Energy is free. If you want to mince terminology and you want to talk about, well, free energy, you know, there ain't no such thing as free energy. Well, okay, if you want to go that route, let's just hypothetically get away from free energy and let's just call it efficiency from now on.
No, see this, I've said it at least 100 times on the same show. There is no such thing as energy that is not free.
That's right.
The cost is the machine to convert one type of energy that you cannot use into a type of energy you can use. Duh, the wind blows for free. So you put a sail on a sailboat and it pushes the boat. However, if you design that sail right and do it right and use physics, use science, you can actually sail your boat into the wind on a 45-degree angle.
Yeah, they've been doing it for how many hundreds of years?
Yes, that's my point. The energy is free. It's the machine to convert the energy into usable power that costs money.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. Even with the machines that we got that are they're known to be inefficient, the internal combustion engine's only like 20-some-odd percent efficient. The rest of it is all wasted energy. And yep. Why is that? Because if you ever wanted an example for over unity, the internal combustion engine should be the one. Because what happens when you start that thing up and all the processes of friction and vibration and everything's occurring and the combustion inside the chamber and all that kind of stuff, well, it's continue to build up heat, and it continues to do that to the extent that if you don't have a radiator system on that thing, it will literally destroy itself. All these metals that take thousands of degrees or whatever to put together can be destroyed because now they're reaching their thermal breakdown and they fail. And if you took the weakest point of any vehicle, don't matter what it is, the weakest material on there, as far as what it takes to run that engine, you find the weakest material, you find that thermal breakdown point, if you never exceed the thermal breakdown of the weakest part of that engine will never fail. It will run forever. It will never get hot. It will never wear out. And if you understand what's going on with the combustion portion of it, how it is that you are actually able to get carbon blow by from the piston itself, then your oil will never even get dirty. And if you understand that when you're running that piston, every time you mash on the gas and those pistons and everything's going faster, the more RPMs it gets going on there, the shorter the time that you have to burn to get a clean burn on that fuel. So by understanding how much fuel it takes to create the combustion to begin with and how much time it actually takes to burn it, you could build the perfect engine that would burn any fuel perfectly clean, because every single burn is a complete burn. And that's the problem with all modern engines today, is that they do not get a complete burn. Otherwise, they would not need an oil filter, and they would not need a catalytic converter, and they would not need any kind of emission control, smog control, or anything like that, because every single thing, when it went in there, it would get a complete burn every single time. And they can't seem to engineer it like that.
Yes, they can. The problem is money. They deliberately design a motor to only last a certain length of time.
Yep.
It's like, for example, I love talking about two-stage oscillator. I don't want to get anybody mad at me or angry with me, but I've had several people that made a two-stage oscillator, did measurements here. Oh, it's only 15% efficient. Somebody else says, oh, it's 20% efficient, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Mine, I powered mine up. They say, I powered it up, and I let it run by itself, and it runs for 43 minutes. Somebody else says, well, mine runs for 50 minutes. Well, I got news for you, man. Mine runs for 2 hours and 23 minutes. You power it up and turn it loose and don't add any more power. It will run by itself for 2 hours and 23 minutes. What is the difference? The difference is I made mine more efficient. They had just metal passing through a hole in a piece of metal. I put bearings in it.
Well, that's the whole deal right there. It's all in the engineering.
Yeah. And they had a chunk of concrete as a pendulum.
How many?
Lead.
How many?
Square. Mine was shaped like a double-bladed axe. It was more aerodynamic. It was more dense.
How many foot-pounds of pressure does it actually take to get the motion going?
To get it going, it takes a lot of energy. But once it's actually running, it takes very little. It takes less than 10 inch-pounds of energy to pick up 90 pounds 5 inches.
I get that, but even on the startup, because that would be the weakest point, just to getting it past that initial boost, how many foot pounds?
Very little energy.
So basically, if you could measure out how many foot pounds that it would take of pressure, you could actually overcome whatever weight it is just by understanding basic leverage, you know.
So, anything over 10 inch pounds will cause it to gain height.
Well, there you go, man. So,
10 inch pounds will power it when it's running. So, 12 inch pounds, it would take a long time, but it would eventually gain its weight, its height, to get its max power. So, but it would take a long time to do it. So, if you put 20 inch pounds in it, it would take a lot less time to get it up to running speed. But once you get it up to running speed, it's less than 10 inch pounds. And it will pick up 90 pounds, 5 inches.
Well, everybody that's out there that basically really super highly educated according to the college system, basically, for whatever reason, they can't ever step outside that box once they're in there. They have to stay inside that box.
Right.
It drives me insane because you got a lot of brilliant people that if they would try something before they denied it, they might just be surprised. All these so-called laws of physics and theoretical science and all that is just that. It's theory. You know, like I was mentioning earlier, person can look through a telescope at a light in the sky and see this tiny little blinking light out there, and they can sit there and theorize that because this thing is blinking this particular color, then there must be this type of gas or this type of material using the different light spectrums, and they can tell you what's on this supposed little dot out there as far as being a star millions of light years away, and they can also tell you by the wobble that occurs, and they take a picture of it, and then they'll see it moved a little bit, and so it's got this wobble, so it must have a planet around it and all this kind of stuff. Never mind the fact that they never actually was there to be able to even use the doggone scientific method, the laws of observation, to determine, what's really going on. It's just a theory at that point. And so when people are taught theoretical science and they're taught the laws of thermodynamics and this is the rule book and you can't exceed this because these brilliant people before us figured all this kind of stuff out, that's where they end up cheating humanity out of the brilliant minds. There are people that are working in their garages who have more brains and common sense than 99.9% of all the so-called educated mainstream science guys out there.
Right.
And if that sounds rude, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you wasted 10, 20 years of your life going to college and spending all this money to try to be indoctrinated into believing that things aren't possible But I've seen a 300-mile-an-hour wind lift somebody's house off of a foundation, and I know that's, now you're playing with power. I've seen all kinds of natural disasters. Nature is powerful. And people have figured out that if you pressurize water, you can cut through steel with that water.
Oh,
is that
yeah,
crazy?
That.
Huh?
I have seen that, a torch for cutting steel.
Yep.
Cut half inch solid steel plate with using nothing but water pressure.
That's it. And so if you look at, you know, water erosion and natural occurrences, how a river will literally take away masses of land and make that river wider, nature's powerful. And if you understand and respect nature, then you know you got all the energy you could ever use. So, let me see. I got something going on in the chat room here that I missed. Stephen said basic physical notion of heat and temperature were established in the 1600s, and scientists of the time appear to have thought correctly that heart associated with the motion of a microscopic... I'm terrible at reading constituents of the matter, but in the 1700s, it became widely believed that heat was instead a separate fluid-like substance. Experiments by James Joule and others in the 1840s put this in doubt, and finally in the 1850s, it became accepted that heat is in fact a form of energy. The relation between heat and energy was important for the development of the steam engine and the 1824, what's that say, Saudi? I can't even pronounce that. It looks like carrot, but no, it's camet. I don't know. I'm a terrible reader off the screen when I got my reading glasses on. They don't do me much good. Anyway, let me get back to it. Had captured some of the ideas of thermodynamics in his discussion efficiency of idealization, or what? Idealized the engine around 1850. Rudolf Clausius and William Thomas Kelvin stated both the first law, the total energy is conserved, and the second law of thermodynamics. Total energy conserved and the second law of thermodynamics. The second law was originally formulated in terms of the fact that heat does not spontaneously flow from one colder body to the hotter. Other formulations followed quickly, and Kelvin in particular understood some of the law's general implications. The idea that gases consist of molecules in motion had been discussed in some detail by Daniel Byrne. I can't even pronounce half these doggone names, man. But you're looking at the dates anyway. But had fallen out of favor and were revived by Clausius 1857 following the James Clerk Maxwell in 1860, derived from the mechanics of individual molecules collision, the expected distribution of molecular speed and gas. Boy, I butchered that. Put a couple of big magnets as a pendulum and a couple of toroidal coils either side would be interesting to see what output you can get. He's talking about your two-stage oscillator, putting some electrical deals on there. And Stephen said, hey, Shaziz, Jermaine is getting ready to go to college. Don't disillusion him for before he gets there. Well, Jermaine, are you there?
Yes, I am there.
All right, look. I'm not trying to want you to go to college. That's a good thing if you go to college. But what I want you to do is when you go to college, go there with a mindset where you're not going to allow yourself to be indoctrinated to not be able to think outside the box. Because there's a lot of college professors out there that say the laws of physics cannot be defied. There's no way that you're going to defy the laws of physics. And it goes all the way back to like the Wright brothers. You know, when people would say things like, well, man were meant to fly, that God would give him wings and so on down the line.
And I say he did.
Yeah.
47. Huh. Give him a brain to figure it out.
There you go. If man wants to fly, if man wants to fly, what's to stop him?
Exactly.
That's the thing. Because if you understand basic physics, I think we lost. I think we lost Ted there. I was trying.
Don't forget me is the old saying about it, a heavier than air machine cannot fly. Duh. You shoot a bird, he dies. He's heavier than air, he falls. He flies because he can.
Yeah.
And man can fly. He just needs to build a machine to do it with.
Well, it's funny, there's a few insects out there that should not be able to fly according to aerodynamics, but yet they do.
Like the bumblebee. I think it was 6 engineer college graduates that figured out that a bumblebee aerodynamically could not fly. The problem that they had was nobody knew how to speak bumblebee to tell it.
Huh.
That was the whole problem with their math.
So we lost you there, Ted. Was that it?
Telling me why. So he did it anyway.
What do you think about all this, Ted?
Well, I'm quite interested in mad science, Shaziz. I mean, you know, for me personally, I mean, you know, if you really want to know what I think, I mean, my whole desire is to make simple experiments to show the people. That's why I'm so attracted to your show, is because that's what you've been doing for the past 10 years or 5 years or whatnot.
Yeah.
So it's like, I really just here to absorb and to gather the information. My phone battery died there for a second, so I lost a few minutes of the show and just now getting back on.
Oh, cool. Well, I fully intend on getting back into the swing of things. My lab kind of got destroyed, so I got one heck of a mess, but nonetheless, I can still do smaller, simpler experiments. I also want to get back into what I was telling you a while back about the plasma. I want to take some bulbs, and I want to show some people basically what me and Raymond seen it. He was here firsthand. We took a headlamp out of a car that was burnt out that you could not use in the normal circuitry of the car. It won't light up because obvious reasons. It's shorted. You know, there's no there's a break in the system. And we hit it with a 20,000 volt Beckett oil burner igniter at the right frequency that it was able to literally leap across that gap and still light up that light bulb. And so, with that said, if you understand basic science says light is heat and heat is light, vice versa. So if you can visibly see it, then you have heat involved. And when you're talking about plasma and you're talking about frequency ranges, then you got to talk about the microwave oven, because that's how the microwave oven actually functions. The microwave oven, the magnetron in a microwave oven is quite literally a light bulb. All right, it is a light bulb that is customized to send a high frequency. You got 2 voltages going on in the microwave oven in the old style with the transformer. The new style use flyback technology, inverter technology is what they call it. But it's a different circuit that works kind of like the old Slayer exciter circuit or Tesla coil or whatever. But either way, in the old style microwave, you got a microwave oven transformer that takes 120 volts to 220 volts AC at either 50 or 60 hertz, depending on what neighborhood you're in. It takes that energy, and it basically pulses a field into the secondary, which has a whole lot of windings, thousands of windings on the secondary, that now that energy is compressed and pressurized, and you lose current in the secondary, but you gain an astronomical amount of voltage. So as opposed to 120 volts input, now you're getting a 2,000 volt output at whatever frequency range you're firing that thing at. Well, hold on a second. That, basically, when you light that light bulb up, which is the magnetron, and while that heat is being going on the element inside there, that high frequency is coming in there and it's knocking electrons off inside that vacuum. Those electrons can...
That,
Hold on a second.
All right, go ahead.
Those electrons begin to spin around because you got a magnet on each side of them. And as they spin around, they get going faster and faster, and more get knocked off, and they get faster and faster, and then they get trapped up in these little slots at the other end of that magnetron, which is inside, it's basically a light bulb. And that reaction that's going on produces a wave. And so at the other end of that doggone microwave magnetron, there's another magnet that's guiding that electron flow in that direction, and by the time it gets to the other side, you have basically the equivalence of an antenna that sends out a super fast short wave called a microwave. That microwave goes inside your food and interacts with the water molecules in your food, and that's how your food is cooked. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, but you're missing. You're not missing. I mean, you're going over the very important part of the high voltage. The higher the voltage, the less wattage you need to do the same amount of work. You showed me how to light the burnout fluorescent bulbs using high voltage and high frequency. Right? I came home to 15 burnout of T8. Bulbs that normally use 28 watts per bulb. I lit 15 of them at less than 4 watts per bulb and lit up my entire backyard.
Well, they
fit. The higher the voltage, the higher the frequency, the less actual electricity. A wattage is your actual electricity.
Yep. Well, they.
Okay, we're using less electricity lighting up 15 bulbs.
They figured out how to take the microwave oven transformer out and use transistors and power MOSFETs in order to do the same exact thing that that transformer was doing with flyback technology. They was able to still make a microwave out of that deal. And so your modern day microwaves, they don't even have transformers in them anymore. They have a flyback driver, just like a TV set would. So it's pretty simple what I'm trying to explain to people, and that's why I want to get back into firing up them old bulbs so that people can understand if you got heat, it's an energy force that you can use, and just like Raymond just explained, it doesn't take near the power input in order to get the results that you want.
Yeah, here's the thing that a lot of people don't realize. It is easier to make high voltage than it is high amperage.
Yeah.
Amperage is the amount of electricity that you have. The voltage is the pressure to push it. But if you have a lot of pressure, you don't need that much volume.
That's right.
You can do the same amount of work, you know, with a pint as you can with 5 gallons.
At the range at what we run our power at inside our house is only a fraction of the power that they actually put down the power line. And the power lines themselves, you couldn't run anything off of that power. It's basically dirty electricity at that point. They just ramped the frequency up and sent it so they could send it down the line further and get it out to more customers. But by the time it gets to you, it has to go through a step down process using that transformer outside. And that transformer is probably one of the best hidden secrets of all time, because that transformer is what takes that energy back to a state where now you can use it. You see what I mean? It's not just a step-down transformer. It's also a storage device as well. There's a built-in capacitor in that thing. Watch how they build these things. They'll roll two sheets of aluminum with an insulator between them, which is basically your dielectric for your capacitor, and they'll roll around this thing, and then they'll roll the coils, the primaries and the secondaries, right over the top of that doggone thing, and then submerge it in oil so you have a power source that can keep a steady flow and then step that voltage down so that it's now safe for you to use in your house. Now, why can't your average Joe do that? Because they don't have no common understanding of what just occurred. And it's so ridiculously simple, it's crazy. But, you know, that's what we're up against. If we can get the right crew of people together that are willing to, like, look at basic science and basic physics and leave all the high-tech terminology to the crazy people, we can get things done. You know? That's it. That's the simple of it. So some of these guys out there are taking old oil burners and learning from these old oil burners and figuring out that they can build a better oil burner for a lot cheaper than the ones that are out there, and the BTUs that they're getting out of the other end of these are ridiculous. Enough to the extent that the piece of machine that they use to actually, the piece of metal that they actually use to for the nozzle portion of it gets so red hot that at certain temperatures it's going to destroy itself.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And that's a lot of power coming out of what would otherwise been classified as waste oil. They're taking
right.
people's junky oil and they're, you know, making something that's putting a whole lot more power out than they're actually putting in. It's a misnomer to even say that, because the amount of energy that is available in a 9-volt battery is ridiculous. You think that all that 9-volt battery can do is run a radio or whatever, but you take that same 9-volt battery and you got a circuit and you're pulsing, you're simulating a magnetic field. You can get wireless energy transmission through the air that you can then in turn energize gas into the fourth state of matter with one of these fluorescent bulbs from several feet away. And that's a lot of power. You see what I mean?
Yes.
And if you understand how to take that power back into usable energy again, as far as the standard model that we use, then it's ridiculously simple. And the simple is just what the doggone power company's been doing for years. They use capacitor technology to bring it back down into usable current again. You know, all these wireless energy Tesla coils and everything, see, they get this really cool light display, you know, they get all this breakout. Well, it's all wasted energy because basically they ramped it up and the energy's got to find some place to go. It's looking for a path to ground. Of course, it looks cool. It's a lightning show. And everybody's, oh, yeah, well, you know, it took this much power to get it, and what are you going to do with it when you got it out there? It's basically wasted energy. It ain't no different than that doggone internal combustion engine in your car. Because the amount of energy that thing wastes, the heat alone in a gasoline engine is more energy than you need to get from point A to point B. Imagine if you focus that heat energy into a useful purpose. Think about it. How many different directions can you go with heat? Any ideas?
A lot.
Well,
more than you got
infinity.
Yeah.
Boy, then you've got
talent
on this radio
show. Yeah, well, you know that when you heat something, it expands. It basically, the gas, if you got a solid, let's say you got a doggone metal ball, and it's got nothing but air inside of that, and it's sealed. If you put that ball with air in there, and you put it on a fire, that thing will keep on heating up and heating up until that atmosphere inside there expands and that thing will blow up, man. Try it. If you think I'm crazy, go get a can of pork and beans and stick it on your next campfire. Just make sure that you stay...
Think about this. They actually use heat, like a little flame, the size of a birthday candle, to make ice.
Yeah. That's another thing, too, about the heat exchange systems.
Almost all of your RV trailers and motorhomes today have ammonia water refrigeration system. They make ice, and it uses a little flame.
Yep.
Heat makes ice. I mean, come on, man.
That's it. But if you understood that...
And you got air conditioning.
If you take
water and gyrate it and move it real fast, and you got heat.
If you understood that concept, then you could take that engine, instead of putting a compressor on there, which is adding an extra load to that engine, you could actually take that heat off of that engine and run your air conditioning just with the waste heat alone.
Right.
It'd be so cold inside that car you wouldn't even want to sit in it.
Well, you know, they make swamp coolers. All it is evaporating water and it cools.
Yeah.
There, you take water and put it in your blender and turn your blender on puree, and in 20 minutes, you're going to take a pound of water and raise it 50 degrees.
Well, think about it, how a dehumidifier works.
Exactly.
Huh. So, guys like us...
You got dehumidifiers.
Yep. Guys like us, we look at machines in a different fashion than the average Joe. All the things that you could actually repurpose certain equipment into, it would blow your mind if you really knew what you had access to. So as far as people saying that they can't afford to build a generator for emergencies or whatever, man, you can turn anything from an AC motor into an alternator or a DC permanent magnet motor into a generator. It doesn't matter. If you understand how those things are actually functioning, if it'll work this way, it'll work that way, back, forward, and back. So if you put energy into a AC motor, now you turn that into a generator on the opposite side. You got to put electricity to it, just like your average alternator has to be energized because it doesn't have permanent magnets in it. But nonetheless, there's power.
Speaking of making a homemade generator, I like that idea. And I'm looking around for my Beckett oil burner igniter, and I'm wondering, you know, I see a couple different kinds out there, and I'm wondering, is there a specific one you like to use?
I like the one that's 12 volt. That's the 12 volt one that you can actually hook to a battery. And the reason,
you like the 12 volt.
Yeah. I mean, the AC ones are, I guess are good as well, but I like the 12 volt version because it a long time ago I set a number. I wanted it to be, if I could make something run off of a 12 volt system, you realize how ridiculously easy it is to come up with 12 volts.
Okay, Suzanne, can I cut in here just for a minute and talk to Ted?
Yeah.
Ted, you're worried about the name brand. Don't worry about the name brand so much. What Suzanne is trying to tell you is the 110 volt ones, the ones that you put 110 volts in, are for household heaters, and they have a actual machine, or what do you call it, the deal in that measures light. So once the furnace ignites, it turns the oil burner igniter off. Those will not burn continuous. The 12 volt ones have a heat sink on them, and they will burn continuous.
Oh yeah, I should have said 110 volt
and ran it continuously and burnt out in 4 hours and 23 minutes.
Yeah, okay? I should.
12 volt are designed to burn continuously 24 hours a day.
I should have said
make sure the one that you use has a heat sink on it, and preferably 12 volt.
Yeah, I should have said constant duty one. I forgot about that.
Constant duty.
So anyway, I've ran those for hours and hours on time, and they don't burn up. Unless you're abusing them, not using them right, then they won't burn up. But even at that, if somebody could, re-engineer those Beckett oil burner igniters, I know what's in them. They're power MOSFETs, and essentially, you're basically just pulsing a signal through and into a primary and a secondary in there, which is producing high voltage. You could actually probably replicate them cheaper than you can buy them. But if you can get a hold of the Beckett oil burner igniters, that they'll go from 12 volts to 20,000 volts in the milliamp range, and that at that frequency range is what I was doing all my experiments with high voltage. So you can energize gas into the fourth state of matter with something as low as 300 or 400 volts AC. So if you can't find one, you can still energize gas into plasma. And all you need to know about, basically ramping that voltage up is what Tesla showed about, how the Tesla coil, flipping that knife switch. The faster you flip it, the faster those pulses will go up and down, and it, you know, just ramps up the voltage on there. So it's like Raymond said earlier, it's really ridiculously simple to get high voltage. And at high voltage, you got everything you need, no matter what frequency it is, in order to be able to energize gas into the fourth state of matter. It's so crazy simple. You can probably get on eBay and buy some of those deals like Raymond got. How many volts did you say those little units that you had were, Raymond?
Oh, God. They put out like 60,000, 80,000 volts.
Yeah.
Oh, and they only take 3 to 4 volts in.
Yeah, so you could take those and energize gas into plasma. Now, the whole entire deal is if you can keep that thing from ever getting hot, even the Beckett oil burner igniter itself, if you can keep that thing super cool, it will never fail. These things have to reach the thermal breakdown before they fail. And to reach the thermal breakdown is so, it's as simple as having too much current flowing through there or feeding back. You understand that?
Right.
Yes, sir.
So, you know those little transformers you just asked me about, they put out like 80,000 volts.
Yeah.
And you can only put like 3 or 4 volts into them, but they're only good for like a minute and a half each. But why not put them in series? And where the one runs for 30 seconds, then another one, then another one, then another one, so they have time to cool off.
All right, why are they...
expensive. They're less than $2 a piece.
All right, but why are they only... why will they only last a couple minutes apiece?
Because they don't have anything to draw the heat off of.
That's right.
If you can heat up fast enough, then you can burn it continuously.
That's right, so...
The 12 volt, every one of them, have a heat sink on it to get the heat off.
How long do you think one would last if it was, you know, encased in liquid nitrogen?
Oh, Lord, forever. Until the liquid nitrogen went away.
Yeah, so basically, until if you can keep that heat going away from that and constantly, it will never fail. And
no,
so,
exactly. The only thing that causes it to fail is the heat to burn out. That's it.
So that's the key. To the whole entire deal, if you want to get a lot more power, like you said, those things are running as low as 3 volts.
Yeah.
So 3 volts and you're getting 80,000 volts.
Yep.
Voltage is pressure. And if you understand how to take that voltage and turn it back into usable power again, it's as simple as blowing up a doggone balloon, man. It's that doggone simple. And, you know, I get people to get mad at me all the time because they say, well, you know, it just couldn't be that simple. You just try to oversimplify everything. And
I lit 15 fluorescent bulbs on 20,000 volts. How many could I light on 80,000 volts?
That's the point. Only thing that gas is looking for is the same thing in a microwave oven that the microwave is looking for. Is that when you're rocking those molecules back and forth so rapidly that they're producing friction, which in turn produces heat, and there you go. So while you're in the process of using these things, you also should be looking at a way in order to cool those things down. So using the heat that's produced in the plasma, you could turn around and use some of that heat to make a cooling system that would come back around and cool that unit down while it's running. Just like a regular automobile engine has a cooling system, if you make your electronics with a cooling system, they won't fail. They have to reach the thermal breakdown, otherwise they will never fail. Every single motor out there, if you could get that oil in that motor to never ever reach its thermal breakdown, and that engine to never reach its thermal breakdown, that motor will never fail. That's the whole thing. When the oil gets hot, that heat's transferred somewhere. It goes right into the block. When you cool that oil down, that's why the race car drivers put oil coolers on their cars. It's because they're running the heck out of these cars. And if they're able to run at a couple hundred miles an hour around a doggone track and not blow that engine up, you know, for how many hours or how many laps that they run, like the Indy 500 or something like that?
Yeah.
They understand by keeping that oil cool that they can run the heck out of that engine. So that's what I'm talking about. If you keep that oil in that thing cool, and if you can keep that oil clean, that engine will never fail as long as none of the other parts, the weakest portion of that engine, never reaches its thermal breakdown. That motor will last forever. So, actually, you could beat the industry at their own game. You could go buy their doggone vehicles, modify them to ensure that your engine oil is cooled better than they had it coming out of the factory. You keep it down to a good operating temperature where it's just thin enough where the oil pump will be able to pump it without no problems, and keep that oil at that proper temperature, and you watch how much longer that engine will last. It's
the average automobile engine average runs about 200-250,000 miles. If you Teflon coat all your bearings, put extra oil coolers on it, and good filters, you can get over 1,000,000 miles to the same engine.
Yep. And why it is that people haven't figured out that you could actually get around ever even having. The only reason why in the doggone engine, internal combustion engine, why you ever get your oil dirty is because the ring system inside the doggone cylinder is the flaw in the system. If you're not getting a complete burn on that fuel and you get carbon blow-by, because basically what happens is when that fuel's ignited, it causes those rings to expand out to produce a seal on that cylinder. So when that happens, there's a little split in these rings because of the way that they're designed to be able to spread out and produce that seal. Well, if you got two sets of rings, or maybe even three, some of them have three rings in them. But nonetheless, two or three rings, even though you've got only got a little tiny split in between there, you get carbon blow-by, which goes down and gets into your oil. And that's the black stuff that you find in your oil. And then it has to be filtered out through whatever type of oil filter you're using. And then eventually you got to change your oil because you got carbon buildup in it. But if you had a way by which you could actually take, instead of building that seal with the slip-type rings, and build it with something like heavy-duty Kevlar or something that would seal it permanently. When it's going to still slide up and down inside there, but there's no way that anything can blow past that, then everything that is exploded inside that combustion chamber goes out the exhaust instead of down into your oil. You could design a set of rings that would ensure that you never even had to have an oil filter. Your oil would last a lifetime of that car. Plain and simple. The only reason why your oil fails is because it's getting carbon blow by past those rings. Not enough to make it look blatantly obvious at first, but see how many miles that you can get on a really really hard run of your vehicle all the time. You know, you got so many miles that you got to change that oil because it starts to get too cruddy with all that carbon, which now is acting like an abrasive on your bearings and everything else. You see what I mean?
You know, I've had three brand new vehicles my lifetime, and all three of them, I had the bearing and cylinder oil Teflon coated. And
yep.
On those vehicles, I changed the oil after break-in, okay? After break-in, I changed the oil every 45,000 to 50,000 miles, but I changed the oil filter every 6,000 miles. And I got 450,000 miles on every one of those motors.
Yep. Well, what I'm saying, though, is properly engineered, you wouldn't even have to have an oil change. You wouldn't even have to have an oil filter. But the system out there, I know they know how to do this. But if you're not selling oil filters, you go out of business. If you're not
it's about money.
Yeah.
If they do a car that will run forever, then they can only sell you one car.
Yeah.
But they only one car for your family, because when you die, you're going to give it to your kids. When they die, they're going to give it to you. They want to make money, so they deliberately design it to only last so long, period. That's it.
That's the whole key. But
that's all it's about, dude.
Why
you take the thing they build and make it better.
Why do you think I call it mad science? Because I know we have the capability of making stuff that will last forever, and we also have the free energy at our disposal anytime we decide we want to use it. See, it's going to have to take the average Joe to want it bad enough to get it. That's it. It's as simple as that. You know, we're relying on the industry. Take them by their doggone vehicles, start modifying their vehicles to last forever. And when you do that, and their business starts to go downhill, they'll take note. I guarantee you that. Because if they ain't making no money, they're going to wonder why they ain't making no money. If they're not selling any oil because you don't have to change your oil anymore, they're not selling any cars because they ain't breaking down anymore.
Same thing happened with Chrysler when they were going out of business. They hired Lucas Coco as CEO, and he's the one that started the engineers designing cars to where the average shade-free mechanic could not work on them.
Yeah.
Because they weren't making money.
Mean,
Lee Iacocca is the one that started the whole concept of building stuff that will not last.
Planned obsolescence. Look it up.
until Lee Iacocca got involved in the industry, think that would last.
I've got it.
Hey, you can buy one out of a junkyard and get it running today.
Yep, I got original.
With electronic parts on it whatsoever.
I got an original Edison light bulb that has outlived all the other light bulbs that I've ever bought.
Yep. But they only sold you one.
Yep.
But now, you buy a light bulb, it's only got so many hours worth of use. It's deliberately designed that way so that you have to buy another one in 2 or 3 years.
Well, that's the whole doggone deal right there.
He deliberately designed to fail.
So why is the world still convinced that there's no such thing as free energy?
Yeah.
That's why. That's why it is.
That's never why, because they designed it that way.
The laws of thermodynamics say it's not possible. You have too many losses. Well, where's these losses coming from? Tell me. The engine gets hot for what reason? How can we resolve friction? How can we resolve the vibration of the engine? See, there's another factor that people don't even think about. The material that you make that engine out, if it's vibrating and it's made out of metal, what's that going to do to the metal? It's going to cause it to get hot. All right, so just the vibration of the engine alone, if you could resolve the vibration of the engine, imagine how much longer your parts will last. Like your motor mounts, you know, you got all this vibration going on and it's, you know, basically flexing that metal. Eventually something got to give. And so you end up putting too much pressure to it one day and it breaks because it's hot. But if you design your engine with a material that will absorb any vibration, it won't get hot anymore. You see what I mean? And if you know that the cylinder itself is the only place where you actually need heat in an engine, then that means you could build this engine not only to not pick up vibrations, but to be an insulator to keep that heat inside that cylinder, which means that it takes less energy to keep that cylinder hot than it does otherwise. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, essentially, you would be building a focused heat engine because the only place in your engine that you need heat is in the cylinder. So, why is it the entire engine gets so incredibly hot that you got to be able to push that heat away using a water jacket and a radiator and a fan? So, you design this engine.
Why do you need 8 cylinders? Why do you need 6 cylinders? Look at the old Jeep with 4 cylinders. Beautiful thing. Inline 6.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And even those look at them racers. When them dragsters, some of them single cylinder, double cylinder blocks pump heavy. You know
what
I'm saying?
That's right. They got some doggone old antique flathead 6s that'll outrun V8s.
Oh, you can't. And then, you know, you reckon that in reality, I mean, to make a V engine with the timing is an artisan craft. I mean, that's a heavy mechanical operation. But for an amateur to make a single cylinder engine, that isn't very difficult, really. I mean, if you have access to a machine shop, you're only going to need a couple parts, really, if you design it correctly.
Yeah.
And it is possible that we could become machinists like that, or to build engines, I feel like. You know, it's not as difficult as people might think. Sometimes I think when I look at people's homemade engines, you know, it might not be, well, I'm going to drive that engine on the interstate, but if you're talking about turning something with a gear ratio, say a generator, it's not very difficult.
Nope.
At all.
Do you remember the old rotary engines?
Yeah. Well, those are, I think Mazda still uses the rotary style engine.
Yeah.
That's their claim to...
But they,
that was so cool.
At one point in time, they had a flaw in the engineering, and I guess they probably resolved that if they got back to it again, but those engines were a lot more efficient than your modern-day piston-style engine. Why is that? Because you've got less stuff that has to be, you know, less forces that you have to go across because they're using that centrifugal force to push that cam around. You see what I mean? It's like if you got a wheel... And you got an explosion on one side of that wheel, and you hit that wheel's going to spin around, and it's going to pick up that centrifugal force every rotation. And all you got to do is hit it every so often. Pow, pow, pow. And you don't have to have no timing there. You see what I mean? All you're doing is adding an extra little force to what is already going on. That's why those rotary engines were like they were. But that's the thing. We could engineer that. And using all the everything you know about science and everything you know about physics, we could engineer them to be so incredibly efficient to work on the cleanest type of fuel. And just like you explained a second ago, if all you need to do is overcome this amount of torque in order to turn that generator head, then that's all you have to worry about getting out. You don't have to be using it for driving down the road if you make a generator.
Well, I'll tell you what. Some of these, I live over here in Amish land, well, close to it, and you go out into the country a little bit, you'll find that these folks don't really, you know, believe in running the wires of electricity into their home. They have a apparition or something. They have, you know, some kind of, they don't like it. It's like, they use physical motion to run air, to run, and the Amish do beautiful craftsmanship work. All their tools, their whole shop sometimes will run on air.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll run on a giant belt. They have a belt in the ceiling that is always turning, and then all the tools come off of ratios off that belt that drives all the time in their workshop. And they, because it's against their religion to do it a different way. They literally have to do it physical, mechanical. They can't tap in. They don't believe in tapping in to the, it's interesting because these folks knew about, you know, what they considered the dangers of tapping in to the ether even before, you know, they just knew it in their heart or whatever. You read Tesla and, like, what was he doing? Like, read Tesla, he's always talking about meditation. He's always talking about, you know, getting information from others, tapping in. Like, I don't necessarily believe that aliens were, like, coming down in a ship and visiting him. He was able to communicate with the frequencies going on. I think that high voltage, high frequency can actually cause, like, distortions between what people might consider, like, layers or dimensions of the universe. And that's a pretty unique aspect of it, I think. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's also kept secret. Not so much just greed only, but there's a science and there's something hidden in there that, you know, it isn't wanted to be for the average person to know about. Because I think it can start proving things like the soul, religion, not necessarily individual religions, but the fact that there is, like, other forms of life and different layerings of electricity even. Which is, I don't know if you all believe in that, but that's what I've been kind of studying a little bit.
Nothing in this world surprises me. I'm trying to find the proper Trump hammers, that's what it was.
I mean, just read that Tesla were in his introduction, he's always talking about, like, meditating and, you know, tapping in and getting knowledge, you know, through, like, relaxation of the mind and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's really in that one where he's got, the increasing, you know, overcoming, like, the increasing energy of the world or something like that. He's got a title. I forget the name of it.
Well, sir, I was trying to get back to what you were talking about, the Amish, how they learned a lot of different things where they don't have to use electricity. Are you familiar with a tromp?
No.
A tromp is a water-powered air compressor commonly used before the advent of electrical power compressors. A tromp is somewhat like an airlift pump working in reverse. Tromps were used to provide compressed air for bloomery furnaces in Catalonia and the U.S. The presence of the tromp in signature attributes, Catalan forge, whatever, a type of bloomery furnace. Basically, what they did was they had, like, they built a water supply, and then they had this, either that or tapped into an already existing water supply, and they drilled this hole real deep down into a chamber, you know, like a cave or something like that. And as the water is coming from the outside and it's falling down this deal, it's filling up this chamber, and the air in between the ceiling and the water itself, the water level itself, would produce an air pressure. And they were running like pneumatic motors back in those days with air pressure, and basically can use it for air conditioning as well. So what do you think?
Well, I kind of like all that. I mean, even if you don't want to get into the etherical, like, spiritual consciousness side of high power, like EMF power, there is a field around it. And, you know, I mean, studies that you see where people have lived under the high tension power lines are more susceptible to certain types of diseases, allegedly. So, you know, if you see abnormalities in the growth of the vegetation, I mean, we wouldn't consider it, in my opinion, when you're looking at plants, as a bad abnormality. They just seem to grow faster. So I don't know, but, you know, I see there could be something there with sticking to simple mechanical operations, you know, for if you're into certain aspects of, like, health or whatever. I mean, if you could do things you want to do without needing to create, you know, intense magnetic fields, then, you know, that would be a little bit safer to be around for day-to-day work, like in a workshop, I would think. So, I mean, you know, there is debatable as to if the Amish are correct and why they do it, but it is a fact that if we ever needed to make what we have today with things all around us, there would be so many ways to do it. We could do it with so many techniques, and even in your geographies, like you're saying, with the water and the elevations and stuff. It depends where you live, and if you can use your mind, and if you study, like, almost like, you know, being a naturist, or, you know, some people call it survivalist, but being able to walk around in nature and find all the food you want, all the herbs you want, all your medicine, find where clean water is, find where different parts that might stay a little warmer during the cold because of a cave close by, and, you know, venting. And so, if you know the land around you, there's infinite ways to tap in, and I think that's what, you know, the mechanical side gives us, is like, well, if you find yourself without, you know, an old battery with some copper and some zinc and some wire around an old motory gun string and make your own devices, then, you know, you can most definitely probably find your way with mechanical as well. And I think that's the beauty of people that are, like, very resourceful.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like the younger generation that I come from, we, the old timers, like, even like the baby boomer kind of thing, this, like, these generation things, like, there's a couple generations in the middle that have lost the ability to really be resourceful. Unless they're poor. Poor people are still resourceful. And rural people are too, because of the access to products.
Yeah.
But, like, the greater percentage of people, they don't really see the need in being resourceful. I think it's like anything. Once you get into it, it becomes kind of fun. It's like a hobby. Well, what kind of trash can I take today and make something? Like, for me, it's more enjoyable to walk around my barn or to find the parts around my collections than to go out and buy the part. You know, it really is. I like that part.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to go on a rant or anything, but I like the mechanical side. I think the knowledge is just as important in a long-term effect for passing knowledge down to our generation, the next generation, is to see that, well, we haven't forgot about simple mechanical, even though we're tapping into like high magnetic electrical, you know, using DC pulse or whatnot. And it's real interesting that we view this DC pulse and this oscillations as like some kind of like, in my opinion, like a sci-fi thing. But it really does go back to as early as Tesla and probably before these folks were knowing about this, that, you know, this force was out there. And it, that just goes to show really the length of history as we know it and where we really sit in the long length of history. We don't really even know what's going on. Well, and especially in America, when we look around at our buildings and say, wow, this 300-year-old building is old, like, well, go to Europe. You call a 300 building there old, like, they're gonna say that ain't old. Like, this is a 3,000-year-old building or whatnot over here. And it's like, well, maybe not that old, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but see, some people might have thought Tesla was crazy for some of the things that he talked about, you know, and even being able to see or thinking aliens or whatever. But I don't discount none of that, because one thing that I realized is that there's so much more to this world than meets the eye. For example, they got a sign that we talked about on the show one time that literally takes and sends a signal out that's not an audible signal, but you can still hear words in your head. All right? There's a billboard. Look it up. There's an actual billboard that talks to you, and it doesn't have a speaker on it like you're accustomed to hearing, you know, sound being transferred from. It sends a waveform out that vibrates, and in your brain can understand what's going on. And they were using this during some sort of event for a sci-fi deal or whatever, some you know, ghost hunter show or whatever. And it was a promotional deal. You didn't hear much about it after that, but either way, that technology does exist. So using different types of frequencies, if you go into doing all kinds of experiments like Tesla is, you're going to see things. I guarantee you, without a doubt, you're going to see things that's going to be unexplainable from modern science. And I won't say any further than that, but I'll guarantee you that if you do the same thing that I did with different coils and frequency ranges, you're going to see things that you thought were impossible. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Even if it's to the extent that you hit the right frequency where you basically made yourself hallucinate, it's still, nonetheless, it's a reaction that's coming from a force that you just generated with electricity. Does that make any sense to you at all, what I just said?
To me?
Yeah.
It does.
Well.
Yeah.
I've seen some things in my lab that, you know, basically I just put it out there as, you know, you be the judge of your own deal right there. And I understand how physics works, and I understand as far as, you know, on a molecular structure, you can literally shatter something with the right frequency range. You can shake things apart. You can set things on fire. You know, high voltage, high frequency. It's an easy way to start a fire if you don't know what you're doing with it. You know, modern day is only 50 or 60 hertz, but you can still start a fire with 50 or 60 hertz. But if you understand how to use it properly, then it's safe to use just like anything else. But, you know, the insulators that we've got, you know, your normal insulation on your electrical wire is not designed for high frequency, high voltage. If you look in the back of your TV set, they've resolved that. The back of your TV has wire that is set up for high frequency, high voltage. So it's not like we'd really have to change things if we decided to start running everything on high voltage as opposed to whatever. But there are certain frequency ranges that, you know, will interfere with people. Because we're, you know, we got electricity going on in us as well. That's how our brain works. So what used to sound like sci-fi is actually science fact, because you know for a fact that you can literally transmit a signal from...
Well, how should you?
Huh?
When was the sci-fi craze? What would you say? Is that the 50s or 60s? When were people getting into that?
Now, from where I was at, I mean, I seen it all the way back, you know, in videos that I watched as a child, all the way from the 50s all the way up. But, you know.
Okay, so that was when sci-fi came out to the public.
Yeah.
And look what Tesla was doing in, what, 1910?
Yeah.
Was it 19... You know, when was he doing them experiments?
Matter of fact, like, Tesla actually
was sci-fi 50 years before that. You know what I mean?
They actually made Tesla into a cartoon character and called him a mad scientist. Like, he was the evil mad scientist in the cartoon.
I remember. Yeah, he was trying to destroy the Earth all the time with, like, Matt. He was in the Superman cartoon. They used his likeness in the Superman cartoon, I feel like.
Yeah. The whole
as
thing
one
is,
of the evil Superman.
He gave the world something back then that had we used it now, we'd be so much further advanced than we are now. We wouldn't even be having this conversation because it would all be normal. We'd all be working in perfect harmony with nature. You could send electricity without all the wiring going across the doggone air. And, you know, not have to use all the resources like the trees and for the power
poles. I feel
that. Poles.
Yeah, you're right. We wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah.
You're right. So, please excuse me for a minute.
So, you know, basically, if you can sit there and try to convince me, I want anybody in this world to try to convince me that energy is not free. That we haven't, beyond a shadow of a doubt, proven that energy is free. We've explained it ad nauseum how many different ways there are to, at the very least, make everything so incredibly efficient. It's all in the engineering. How you engineer something is going to determine how sturdy it is. You look at a car made back in the 50s, and then look at a car made today, maybe some of the cars today might look cooler and more modern, futuristic than the cars back then. But I guarantee you that old 1950 Chevy would maul that brand new Corvette, or that brand new Mustang, or that brand new whatever car. You hit that, that's like hitting a brick wall. They made them to last back then. And that's why some of them still exist. But even back then, if the things would have been engineered differently back then, if they'd had a better understanding of physics and all that kind of stuff, you look at some of the modern day cars, the way that the Japanese had engineered things. I don't care what anybody out there in this world says, the Japanese make the best cars in the world, and that's because they understand. And there are other cars out there, other high-performance cars that, you know, they call supercars, that like the Koenigsegg, that's my favorite one because that's probably the fastest car on the planet right now that's off the production floor. But nonetheless, they got people that are willing to pay them millions of dollars to build them custom cars that are super fast, super cool. They got all kinds of carbon fiber technology in them, doggone disc brakes all the way around it. Everything's all engineered for comfort and looks and speed and power. These folks, they know how to build cars. But the Japanese know how to build cars that are not only fast, but they're durable. They'll go for thousands and thousands of miles and still keep on running and still look good. So, you know, if it's all about where there's a will, there's a way. Who wants to put the most effort into any project is the one that's probably going to succeed before everyone else. That's the whole gig. And if we, the people, ever decide that we want to try to use all these gifts and talents that we've got, there ain't nothing stopping us from bringing the future world here and doing it in such a manner that we have everything needed for everybody. Fresh water is not hard to get. You know, heating, not hard to get. Cooling, not hard to get. All the luxuries that we take advantage of in the supposedly the first world countries, as opposed to the poor folks that live in what they classify as third world countries. Why? Here we are in the year 2018 and somebody out there can't even get a fresh drink of water? Are you serious? This is why the world's in the shape that it's in. Because we've allowed greedy men all throughout the history of time to basically manipulate the markets, manipulate the knowledge. And when you want to talk about suppressing the free energy, you know, it really is suppressed, but not in the way you think. They basically don't tell you about it. They don't they don't talk about it, and those that get out there and actually do it and then prove that it'll work, they either get bought off, suicided, or whatever, you know. And then people will say, well, if you talk about Stan Myers getting killed because of his hydrogen technology, you're just a conspiracy nut. Really? Hydrogen technology works. Otherwise, they wouldn't be using it to this very day. Hydrogen technology works. Otherwise, the military wouldn't be saying they're going to run their ships on it. Imagine a Navy vessel that's going to be rolling around and not have to stop anywhere for fuel. It's picking up its fuel on the way.
You know, wait a minute, Shaliz. No one has ever actually proved that Stan Myers was killed. But at the same time, if he was, then that's proof in itself that hydrogen technology works. Think about it. Why would they kill him if it didn't?
That's right.
And I mean, think on, man. They use your head. Think
about this for a second. Our atmosphere is hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and a few other things, all right?
And three-quarters of the world is water, and water is hydrogen and oxygen combined.
And if you understood hydrogen technology and ramjet technology and ram air induction and all this kind of stuff, was kind of why I wanted to try to get into ram air induction, was because these folks have figured out that cold air intakes will actually increase the horsepower of their vehicles, because they now understand that they can get more oxygen in for a better burn and actually be able to use the fuel more efficiently. And so, you know, people are figuring that out and modifying their, high-tech vehicles to be able to do the same thing. Well, you don't have to stop there. You can expand on it. Imagine if you had an airplane, all you had to do is get it up in the air. And then as you're getting up in air, it's at operating temperature, and then you use the whole process of basically bringing air in from the outside, compressing it, cracking it, and igniting it, and sending it right back out the back. Do you realize how powerful hydrogen and oxygen is when it implodes and explodes at the same time?
You know, I've actually talked to several friends of mine in the past that were into race cars and dragsters and stuff. Yep. They would actually pack dry ice around the carburetor and around their fuel lines to make the fuel colder so it would be more fuel. And they would build a system to where the air would come through and it would have dry ice packed around it, to where the melting dry ice, the carbon dioxide, would not mix with the air, but the air would get cold. Therefore, it would condense and have more oxygen to burn with the more fuel.
Yep.
So you're right. Yeah, they use the colder the air, the colder the fuel, the more power you get into the piston. But there again, it burns a lot more power.
That's right. But here's the thing, man. If it's properly engineered, then it wouldn't even be an issue. You could actually engineer an internal combustion engine that would quite literally run off of CO2. Because what is CO2?
Carbon dioxide.
Yeah, okay. It's one piece of carbon connected to two pieces of oxygen, right?
Right.
So you need three things to start a fire. What are those?
Fuel and oxidation.
You need oxygen, you need fuel, and you need an ignition source. All you need that you don't have with CO2, all you need is an ignition source. Diesel engines use an ignition source called compression ignition. So, if you got CO2, you got a piece of carbon that can burn, right? Hello? Did I lose you?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. We were talking about something.
If you got CO2, you got a piece of carbon that can burn, right?
Well, actually, CO2 is burnt carbon. You got to separate the two.
What is carbon?
Not fully burned fuel.
That's right. But is it completely burned?
No.
All right. So, if you had a superheated cylinder and you sprayed carbon dioxide into that deal, what would you now have?
Explosion, but not as which is, but it's not as powerful, right?
That's right. But nonetheless, you took what normally would have been waste and turned it into fuel. You see what I'm saying?
Right. Exactly.
See, they take a doggone catalytic converter and they burn off wasted fuel. Some of which actually gets sent right back up into the intake again. So exactly. You're wasting more fuel when you're driving your car than you're actually using. So it's basically like throwing money down the drain. So what's to stop the average Joe from understanding where the flaw is in the system and re-engineering that engine to do what it could potentially do? You could actually take any modern engine with a little bit of proper engineering and retrofit that engine to run so much more efficient that you wouldn't even need the doggone catalytic converter anymore. That's the whole deal. And right. In order to do this, that means you got to bring your brilliant minds to the table. You know, and you get enough people working on these ideas that we're talking about here, when that information is released out there into the public, it don't matter what the industry says or wants to do, because it one man by himself, like Stan Myers or John Bedini and his brother, or Joseph Newman, or any of the other alternative energy guys, Tesla, that you've heard about, all these are one guy against all the system that's already in place that wants to sell you gasoline. And if you're one of the people that believe that global warming is because man-made CO2, then you should be the one who's out there recruiting the brilliant minds to bring them to the table, because you're the one that thinks doomsday's around the corner. If you honestly believe that we need to save the planet, then why is it that I have such a hard time convincing you to go get the people out there who have the talents and skill sets that I don't, and put them with my mind, and all of us together can engineer these things that already exist and make them so incredibly efficient that, number one, if your electric bill is only a fraction of what it is now, then that means you have more money that you can reinvest in your family or reinvest in new technology, and together we can make a people's corporation that would actually get things done in this world. In the year 2018, and we're still hearing that somebody in this world can't get a fresh drink of water? Folks, do you realize how easy it is to purify water? It's ridiculously simple. But nonetheless, you still got somebody out there drinking out of a mud hole. You still got somebody out there that doesn't have lights and electricity and air conditioning and heating. You know, they're living in a mud hut or on a dirt floor. Some people might actually like that kind of lifestyle, and that's more power to them. But for those individuals who would like to, you know, be able to step up here and enjoy the luxuries of modern society and such, the people out there, the greedy individuals out there that run these companies and corporations, and everybody's like, well, you know, they give us all this technology and, you know, they do what they can, and there's reasons why they can't. No, there ain't no reason why they can't. If a place like Dubai can literally build the land that their skyscrapers are standing on and take water directly from the ocean and desalinate it and use it to go up to cool down the building on the way back down and to flush their toilets and have drinking water and showers and everything like that, if you go look at Dubai and you see what that place looks like, and you see the engineering that went into what they've accomplished, if they can accomplish it there, we can accomplish it worldwide. The question that you have to ask is why? Why is it that anybody in this world has to suffer needlessly for some sort of war over resources such as oil? Who's going to have the pipeline here? Who's going to have the oil field there? Whatever. You look all the way through the entirety of history, including the history of gasoline in the beginning, you know, and all of the industries out there, the big names, the J.P. Morgans and all these different individuals that you've heard through all the conspiracy world that run this world, They only run this world because you hadn't paid attention in science class and you're not willing to take the effort to learn that you are a part of the puzzle, even if you can only do one task, such as you're an awesome welder. You put that awesome welder next to an awesome engineer, a mathematician, a machinist, and you got what you drive down the road. You got an amazing vehicle that works better than theirs, it lasts longer than theirs, is more efficient than theirs. And you took every bit of physics that you understood and you invoked the ones you wanted when you wanted to invoke them. You put the heat where you wanted it to go in that engine. The rest of that engine you should be able to run for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and walk over there and set your naked booty right down on the top of that engine and not burn your biscuits.
Like that.
And you wonder why old Shaziz gets rowdied up and why my hair looks the way it does, because it drives me insane to watch this world set idly by when we're living in the year 2018. When I was a child, they said by the year 2000 we'd have flying cars. They're 18 years late.
The Jetsons.
Yeah, they're 18 years late. And we're still fighting over oil. We're still talking about why it is that we're going to have to become energy independent, because we have to worry about, you know, some country over here that's got a lot of oil, or we find oil over here, or then they take and do fracking and they crack the ground up and they pump the oil and the gas out of that, and then they wonder why, oh, I wonder why that sinkhole happened.
So they're fracking everywhere around me. It's crazy. They're putting in 160 wells in like a 4-mile strip just down the road.
Yeah. But once all that hydraulics gone underneath there, and gas pressure is the same hydraulics as the water pressure down there. Don't matter. You drain all the water out of a water table, you get a sinkhole. You drain all the gas out from underneath there, you get a sinkhole. You drain all the oil out of there, you get a sinkhole. And when your house falls in a hole, and the insurance company says, well, we're not going to do nothing about it, it's an act of God. Really?
I get it.
First off, you didn't believe in God, but now that your money is on the line, now suddenly God is relevant to our transaction here. I paid for the insurance.
I had old-time driller up here, like a water driller. Been drilling water wells for 60 years, old-timer.
Yeah.
And I said to him, what do you think about all this fracking oil and gas, all this? He says, well, I'll tell you one thing. He's like, I ain't never drilled a well with radioactive water until they started doing that. And I was like, what do you mean radioactive water? He's like, yeah, radioactive. I was like, well, how do you get that out? And he's like, well, as far as I know, like, you know, 50,000 years, 100,000 years, he says, he's been filtering water for years. He says, I don't know how to filter radiation out. I was like, oh.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I was like, that sounds like a... No, I'm not too intelligent.
What you need to do is get that man in contact with me, because the next time he drills a well like that, we're going to turn it into a power plant.
There you go.
Well, there's a certain isotope of, I forget what one it is, comes from pretty deep under there. Is it a cadmium or something? Comes from real deep under there.
That
comes from
remember,
a certain rock layering down there. That's how they identify. They know it's from fracking, because that's only really found. It's not from any man-made apparatus. You won't find that residual from manufacturing. This particular isotope, it is particularly locked in these minerals down underground. So you're right. I mean, there's a positive we can do with that, I guarantee it.
Yeah. You take that doggone deal and you use some Tesla technology with that, you can amplify, as that radioactive material is doing its natural decay and releasing its energy, you can capture that energy, store that energy, amplify that energy, and charge your batteries with what would
otherwise... I live in Gasland. We'll get you some radioactive water.
There you go.
Alright.
But that's the thing, man.
It might take me a couple weeks, but I'll get you some.
That's the thing. I'm not afraid of radioactive water. I'm not. But if the people out there are, then there are so many alternatives to the deal. But you got to understand, if these gas companies are out there fracking, first look in the process of how they're doing it. And then try to figure out, okay, well, wait a second. If these guys are pumping and they're cracking this ground underneath like that, what's that do to the stability of the land nearby? And everything is like dominoes. All right, you got this little rock holding up that big rock. Huh?
I don't mean too cynical, but I can tell you what happens when a sheep drinks radioactive water. All its skin falls off.
Well, then that's too much energy for that sheep, I'd say. But if you're not going to drink it, and it's still radioactive, then you might as well make a battery out of it, because like the guy said, what, 50,000 years?
Well, that's only 50,000 years once the radiation stops coming up. I don't know if who knows how long, it ain't every well they frack got radioactive water, don't get me wrong, but it's a big part of the process, and it's not really, I ain't worried about it. Like, I've already made peace with the man. We want to destroy it. It's not really up to me, like I say, to push my free will on these people. Like, they're going to do what they want to do. They think they have a right to do it. Maybe they do. But at the same time, like, all I do is just, like, I work with water. I believe in water. I pray with water. Like, water, I think if humans could start replacing G-O-D with H-2-O, they'd start to understand some things. Everybody wants to talk about dogma and all this and that over and over again, but if you look at the simplicity of the water and everything that goes with it, like, we could have everything we need in our minds and our hearts and everything.
As far as I'm concerned, water is God's miracle cure, because water has everything that the body needs to heal itself.
It has everything. The whole world, like every single, like there's no part of this earth that is really absent of water, short of like, your samples of sodium or whatever that are under oil, so they don't get water on them, so they don't ignite or whatever. It's like there is, you can't take the water out of fuel, like you're saying. You remove the water out of aircraft fuel, the plane ain't gonna go nowhere.
That's right.
You remove the water out of any combustion situation, it isn't just the oxygen, it ain't just the hydrogen. And a lot of people only want to talk about the nitrogen, but that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
And then, then on top of that, you take the water out of it and you have all those three compounds. It's still not going to ignite, in my idea. I don't know. I mean, we need to test it, but I mean, that's just my theory. When you remove the water out of stuff, you don't get, even in what we would consider combustion,
that's
it wouldn't
right.
even work.
There's oxygen in water. All right, I'm posting this link again because we got on the discussion of water, and I want people to take a look at it. This is a book that's out there. I got it on a PDF form, but it's called The 1 Minute Cure, and it's actually talking about hydrogen peroxide therapy, which I'm not endorsing. I'm just saying look into it and listen to what they're saying and always use precautions, but this is the key right here. I found this by accident while looking for information on a hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And that's basically where they put you in a pressurized chamber and they push a lot of high concentrations of oxygen in there to get more oxygen to your bloodstream, to stimulate stem cells and to stimulate cell growth and new cell growth for wounds and stuff like that, and actually has the potential of getting the right stuff in areas to heal your bones and your brain. It's basically putting nature on steroids, because that's what it is. It's oxygen. Your body is 3/4 covered in water, and 90% of all the diseases out there are because you're oxygen deficient in some area or another. Because of some reason you got poor circulation, either your veins are clogged up or you got some sort of mass growing that it cuts off your circulation, and once your circulation goes, it's oxygen deprived. And it doesn't matter which organ you're talking about, if you don't have enough oxygen to that organ, then it's going to fail. And so that water, which is the most amazing power source, I mean, it's hydrogen, oxygen, which are both necessary. They're both power sources in their separate parts. Together, combined, it's water that you can drink. It's a perfect fuel. It's the most stable molecule. Water is amazing, and the earth is 3/4 covered in it. You're mostly water. And so with that said, everything needed to put this planet back in perfect shape has already been provided for you. You just got to be wise enough to use it. You can work in perfect harmony with nature and still have all the luxuries that you got right now. It's that simple. Stephen said, elevated levels of chloride and bromide combined with strontium, radium, oxygen, and hydrogen isotope composition are present in the Marcellus Shale wastewater the studies found. He also got a link in there to in the chat room. But,
all right.
So anyway... Even these, when if they're going to go through the process of drilling deep down in the ground right there, there are so many different things that you have to factor in. One, if you're doing the fracking and you're cracking up the ground, you're loosening up the land that you're standing on. So if you crack up the ground, loosen up the land, and then pull all the hydraulics out from underneath there, which is the pressure that holds the roof of the water table up, when that water drops down, guess what happens? If that roof becomes unstable or is not no longer able to hold up whatever weight is on there, which could be very well be your house or your car or even you, so you take the hydraulics out from underneath that land and it falls in and bam, you got a sinkhole. It's common sense.
I'll tell you, there's a lot of negatives. You know, there's a lot of negatives about it. There's not. I got a buddy of mine.
But there's a lot of positives too if you do it right.
Well, that's the way I look at it. I mean, I look at a buddy from the WA over there, Western Australia, where they got them big old gold mines, huge mines, all kinds of mining over there, Western Australia.
Yeah.
He comes over here to visit sometimes. We were talking a little bit about it because he's a naturalist. He goes over and works with those miners and stuff and does identification of the nature before they destroy it and stuff like that. And so he was telling me with the oil and gas, he's like, yeah, he's like, we look at it like you all are like a test for that. He's like, we put a moratorium, like we banned that for a while we watch what happens to what's going on with you all as a test. We study you. And he's like, from the way it looks, he's like, we're not going to probably be fracking over here. Like, they're too concerned with their like diamond and gold mines. They don't want to like, it's not worth them pulling the gas out if it's going to give away the structural integrity to their other mining. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. There's the salt mine.
They're probably not going to do it, he said, in his mind, after what he's been hearing.
Yep. There's a salt mine that collapsed here, I think it was in Louisiana, quite some time back. But once it opened a hole, and it's basically like a drain plug, it just filled up that doggone mine. And if the water's going downhill, you know, it's going to do a lot of damage. If you ever, did you ever see any of the videos of, I think it was Louisiana, the swamp started going down into that salt mine. Did you see that?
Yeah, I seen that where that salt mine, they punctured a hole in that, in some or another, and all that water went down.
Yeah, it was pulling trees down with it.
Down into that water. Yeah. It was like pulling boats and trailers and everything down in there, I think. It was crazy.
Yeah. But that's, you know, basic physics, man. And once you understand that that's an issue, then you can know how to fix it from that point on. I mean, if they were going to do the salt mine anyway, they would have to pre-plan for just such an emergency that wouldn't be a possibility. You see what I mean? Like reinforcing the sealing of that salt mine to ensure that there was no way that the structural integrity could fail or that they even so much as get a leak in it. You see what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah. The earth moves, man. The earth is more like liquid than we think. You know, solid is only solid. Like, you know, solids are only so solid. You know what I mean? It's like the earth, I've watched it. It moves. I'm only 70 years old, but I've seen the earth move. I know how it flows. There is no structural integrity. Maybe when you touch bedrock, you think you have it, but that's still only a couple lifetimes, in my opinion, before that's moving.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So then you know that once you start into that process of mining, that there's going to come a time when you're going to mine just a hair too much. and nature's going to take over.
Well, look at it. Look. And even when you're in the mine and you leave, after you leave, it still moves. Like, I live on some land that's got some old coal mines. There's, like, areas on the hill where it's like, well, what's these huge depressions in the ground? Well, those are miniature sinkholes from the coal mine collapsing. It's going to slowly collapse more and more over time, too. It's not going to build support in there.
Yep.
There's not going to be a bunch of calcification go on and a bunch of, like, hardening of all this stuff. Like, that's not happening. It's washing out, getting thinner and thinner all the time.
So, you know, here's the thing. You know, there are, I would say right now, we're at a stage right now where we have mined everything that we need to mine. We don't need to mine anything else in this world. If we just recycled the materials that are already presently available, and knowing that when you burn this, you get that, and so on down the line, like when I said, when you burn firewood, everybody thinks, well, that's it. Firewood's gone. All right, yeah, the wood in the structure that it was in before is gone, but now you have ash. The ash can be used for several products. And
have you experimented with the, you know, burning like metals or whatever, like where Bedini was taking the iron pyrite? Like, if you think about how the damage of coal mining, it doesn't come from mining coal. It comes from the leftover iron pyrite that they leave around in high concentrations, and when the water washes through the iron pyrite, it makes it highly acidic.
Yeah.
And so, Bedini was saying, and he took that iron pyrite and he would digest it, he called it, in hydrochloric acid, like the stomach acid. He'd sit in there and dissolve it for a while.
Yeah.
Then after such and such time, he'd pull those rocks out, and then he would let that evaporate with an iron rod down in there, and all them particles that were, you know, suspended in the hydrochloric, attached themselves to that iron rod as it evaporated. Are you familiar with that experiment?
Yeah, a little bit, but...
Yeah, and then he'd take them particles, and he'd shave them off of that rod and place them between two pieces of copper and fire them at 2,500 degrees for X number of time, not very long, I think like 20 minutes or something, and melt that down, and it would recrystallize into a new form. And that's what he was using in his audio amplifiers. That was like, if the speakers were creating the voice in your head technology just using regular speakers with his amplifiers. Like, that was like his main thing. Like, with my research, like, his original concept was like audio technology, and he made his own Bedini audio system where he received he could receive the audio transmissions into the skull using the speakers. You familiar with that?
Yeah, but that's the whole thing about what you just explained there, the process. There's nothing wasted anywhere on this planet.
That's right. Nothing wasted.
This
iron pyrite, like, they call that fool's gold. You know, that's what we call iron pyrite around here. We call it fool's gold. And it's like, is it really a fool's gold? Like, or is gold in iron pyrite? Well,
there is actually traces of real gold in pyrite. All right, but nonetheless, even don't matter what chemistry we're talking about, everything that is on this planet, that was on this planet, is still here. Don't matter. It's just changed forms. If you take in and you burn, plastic, you get another material. If you just melt plastic or pressurize it and heat it up at a certain extent, you can actually bring it back to its normal state, which is basically a byproduct of crude oil. You turn it back into gasoline. Whatever you do with it, whatever process, nature has been recycling everything back in on itself ever since dawn of time. So everything that we've already got, all these plastics, there are energy sources abundant. I mean, look at all the dumps. There's so many dumps out there, and it takes nature time to dissolve that back into its deal, but eventually there won't even be a dump there anymore. You won't even be able to tell that there was ever any man around at some point in time when all mankind is gone. You won't even know we even existed if it weren't for things like the pyramids. You know, somebody built those and they stood the test of time, and so you know that there was a civilization at one time that had that technology. But either way, nature is more powerful than anyone out there. All of us combined, nature is more powerful than us. And if we understood that, and we utilize the forces and the materials that are available, we've done all the mining we need to do. We don't even have to dig in the ground to find crude oil anymore because we can make it in a lab. It's that simple. It's a joke whenever you try to tell somebody out there in the real world that you're not going to run out of oil because they think that dinosaurs, there's only so many dinosaurs that made all this doggone oil, but they don't understand what the dinosaur was made out of. You think the dinosaur was made out of crude oil? Or was the dinosaur made out of the same carbon that this everything that's around you right now is made out of? That's the dirty little secret the whole fuel industry don't want you to know. Because if you knew you could make gasoline in your backyard, why in the heck would you want to go to the gas station and buy it? It's that simple. It's so ridiculously simple. Everything out there is all the same material, and it's been doing the same process. And if you understand those processes, you can make diesel fuel, you can make gasoline, you can make it out of your grass clippings. It's crazy. The whole thing is crazy. Why is it that we are paying ridiculous prices at the fuel pump and ridiculous prices at the electrical company, and still buying all this stuff from all these major corporations out there? I'll tell you why. It's because they paid attention in science class, and we didn't. That's why.
I pay attention in science.
Oh, yeah, you and I. But I'm talking,
that was my favorite class.
I love science class. The real science, not this crazy stuff they got going on now.
You know, I was never really good at math. I'm still not real good at it, but I can do math in my head real easy, like simple math, numbers. I like breaking down the numbers into nines, like that numerology stuff, because the nine's like all invisible and everything. I like playing with that because there's something to that.
Yeah.
And Tesla always said, look at 3, 6, and 9. I'm still looking at it. I don't quite get it, but I'm still, I mean, I got my theory on it. But, you know, that's it.
Well, I did a video series called 1318. I don't know if you ever saw that, but most folks didn't understand what it was all about. But if you're into 3, 6s, and 9s, go watch that. It'll blow your doors off. Because, quite literally, nature has a code written right inside everything. I don't care. It's almost as if we were a version of the Matrix where there was ones and zeros that explained everything that nature does. It'll blow your doors off.
I'd like to say that in my opinion, you know, everything's moving in circles, everything's moving, orbiting, circle this, circle that. But at the heart of the essence of it, I believe it is a pulse. There is an off on that comes from whatever people want to call creation, the source, whatever, the heart of the universe, the center of it all, and emanates out. I think it is at like, It's at a pulse that creates the spin. The pulsing makes everything spin. Well, it isn't the spinning that makes the pulse. The pulse makes the spin, in my mind.
That is the mystery that makes this whole entire experience of life so interesting, because we're constantly discovering and rediscovering, and just when we think we got it all figured out, we find another mystery. So in order to be able to figure out all the forces of nature and all the mysteries of nature and the meaning of life and all that kind of stuff, it's just a wonderful journey. It's a journey that, you know, we could see some incredible advancements in technology in such a short period of time if only people just open up their eyes and realize that they are part of that puzzle. If we could get the average Joes to start networking with one another, you'd be surprised at what you'd come up with. And if you could get on this Skype right here with the doggone video chat, you could be talking to a lab clear across the country, and you could say, hey, look what we found over here. Try this out over there and see if you get the same exact results. And then if you need this particular material, we'll ship it over there to you. And then, you know, back and forth, 3D printing technologies available now, CNC machines and milling machines. So if I can't make a part, you could help me make it. If I don't know how to run a CAD program good enough, you could design it for me. I could tell you what I needed. You could build it, and we could ship these things back and forth. The network of people together doing that, there's nothing that we couldn't accomplish. And that's what I'm looking for.
I've noticed that everybody has their own individual project. Like, each person that's working on, like, a free device or whatever you'll call the devices, is like, they have their kind of mindset. Like, you know about your plasma transformer.
Yep.
And, like, my one buddy knows about the way he does it. And my other buddy knows how he does it, you know. And it's like, but at least the way I view it is, nobody really wants to work on the other person's project too much.
I will.
It's really not.
I will.
I know you are here. You're talking about, you've been trying to bring people together for years, but I'm just saying that just because you and me will, doesn't mean that others will necessarily. I find that, I try to tell you that these inventor type, they're very set on their mindset, and like, I think that's part of how they can funnel that energy or that intention that they have and create these. That's how true inventors work.
Yeah,
and it's hard for them to focus on another invention of somebody else's while they're trying to work on their. It's weird, but well, I noticed that.
There's really
a group of people, I think, that are the inventors.
Yeah,
they bring their idea forward, and then the average people that are just sitting back, being like, "Well, I really want to build something. I really think that it's possible." Blah blah blah. Well, take your pick. You know, my buddy told me, he's like, you should build John Bedini's SSG motor. And I was like, all right. So I did it. And it took me a long time. The hardest part was mounting the bicycle wheel for me.
Yeah.
I'm more inclined to do soldering than I am to mount a bicycle wheel perfectly level. I decided to make mine horizontal because it was easier that way than the vertical way. But I tried that vertical way for a minute. I was like, this is a joke. I was like, I'll put it down horizontal. It works just fine.
Yeah.
It's a powerhouse, really. I mean, for the length of time that wheel will spin, I can charge capacitors up like crazy. I can charge a bank of capacitors over that thing. It's a powerhouse.
Yep. I got a little mini version sitting on my table. I actually did a video about it. But anyway, you know, we're getting down to the wire here. But the whole concept is, if there's somebody out there has a project, and they're kind of stuck on one little deal, if we could only find a way past this right here, we'll put that only find a way past this right here out there on the table and let other people say, here's an idea right here, try this part right here. And I guarantee you, if enough people got that concept in their mind, where I'm not trying to take over your project, I don't even want to know the specifics of your project outside of what you're wanting to accomplish with it. So if you're shooting to get a patent and become rich, you just tell me where your problem is. I can't get this particular material to do this for whatever reason, and I'll say, have you tried this right here? And it may or may not help with whatever. But there's somebody out there that has the answer that you need. I've watched a whole bunch of these projects, a whole bunch of these inventors. They would have a deal that they thought was free energy, and they always came across a snag somewhere along the line. And after a while of trying to beat their head against the wall, they couldn't come up with a solution. And that's because they wouldn't trust anyone else out there to give them an idea and at least try that idea to see if it would work. You see what I'm saying? So if you got an inventor out there that is working on a project, it works perfect to this point, but it's only getting this much out of it. It could, we believe that theoretically it should get more out of there. Just send them my way. I will look at the doggone thing, and I'll look at it with my mechanical portion and give them an idea that they could use to make the doggone thing finally work.
Well, here's another. I think there's another aspect too, though. Once you make something that is like viable, and you're not really interested in patenting it, because you know what comes with that, and you want to. There's like hesitation to even like so to put it out. So like, if somebody doesn't even think they need help with something, but they're willing to put their diagrams out online or share with people so that people can start rebuilding it. Like, that's how science really works too. It's like,
yep.
Even if somebody isn't stuck and like, well, you've got something on your shelf, you might not even think it's that important. But to someone else, if you were to bring that device out, you weren't intending a patent anyway. You just, you found, you make anomaly devices. I know people that make anomaly devices.
Yep.
And they don't research patents. They just do it for fun. If they were to bring that out and then to show people through diagrams how they can build their own, that might be the missing link for what somebody else is doing. Like, that's the way science grows.
That's right.
Is once people can start reproducing other people's projects.
That's right.
And so, like, I listen in science class. That's called, like, the scientific method or whatever. You know,
that's
you
right.
got to get, like, hypothesis, then you got to do some experiment, then it's got to be repeatable.
That's
you know
right.
what I mean?
That's right.
And the repeatability comes in with other people repeating it, not you repeating it over and over again. That, you know, what is that, you know? And the problem, I think, is, well, there's no real scientific journals for us to publish in, and, you know, it seems like when you get online, there's a lot of weird stuff going on online, and it's like, you know, I don't know what to think about it all. I just, like, I understand why people just make anomaly devices and don't really post them, because... where does it go? It usually just brings, like, some kind of weird, creepy harassment around. You know what I'm
yep.
saying? And it's like, well, what's going on here? So, in reality, there's not really even enough people asking for stuff that well. They want everything to be shown to them and taught instantaneous. But then again, you know, that's kind of what you got to do. You got to make a blueprint of anytime you make a recipe, you got to make a good method, have a good solid list of ingredients that really is easy to follow. If you use grams, it's easier to weigh out exact measurements than if you use ounces. So it's like, if you want it to be exact and repeatable, it all goes into the ability of, you know, you to reproduce that in a writing form or some kind of, if you want to do video form or, so, because like, that's why I like how you kind of do stuff on video form. It's nice to watch the videos. And to see people's experiments, how what they're working on video form. I really enjoy that.
Yep, and I agree with everything you said. I want to see people, if I throw an idea out there on the table, I want you to grab it and run with it. All right, that's all I'm asking. I'm not looking to get rich or famous or anything like that. All I want is these ideas. See, I run an idea factory. You know, with my YouTube channel and this right here, I'm going to throw ideas out there on the table every single chance I get. Every single idea, every single ounce of research. And if I put a device on the table and I say, look, if you take this right here, you look at it like this plasma reactor that I'm talking about. The simple of a plasma reactor isn't nothing more than a vacuum spark gap. But the complex of what that vacuum spark gap could be would be that if you took that vacuum spark gap and you introduced any of the noble gases in it, now you have a plasma reactor. Now you need to figure out, how can I take the energy out of that reactor and use it for a useful purpose and get some work done? You run some coils of tubing through that thing. In the actual spark gap probes themselves, those are the actual... spark gap. And so while you're energizing this, you're taking the heat off of that plasma and transferring it to heat whatever it is that you want. And then you can expand on it yet even further with wireless energy technology, with lighting, heating and cooling, and all that kind of stuff. So the type of plasma reactor that I'm talking about is taking all the physics we already know, energizing a noble gas into the fourth state of matter, and is no different than taking a bowl of water and heating it up until it turns into steam. You're pressurizing it. You're energizing it. And so what you do with that material from that point on, you can do the same exact thing that I'm talking about with a plasma reactor. You can do it with a boiler system if you understand the physics of what I'm saying. It is so ridiculously simple. Now, I did a video a long time ago called Pop Pop Boat, and I tried to get a contest going on where people would try to expand on this idea, because if you can make it on a small scale, you can scale it up as well. So if you can get that little boat to go with a little birthday candle on a small scale, you could also get it to go. And with induction technology that we've got available these days, man, I tell you what, that boat would rival a jet ski. It's as simple as that. So, you got any last ideas before we roll up out of here? Anybody?
Yep, not me.
What about you,
man? I got an idea. I like to think that we can all you know, like, make an attempt to be nice to people and treat people good. I really believe that's going to be the change that opens people's hearts up to technology, is that a lot of people are just in bad moods.
Yeah.
And they don't have time to consider things that are, like, fun and exciting for the universe and for our environment and things, because they're trapped in their own little world of, kind of like an own little prison system. And those are the people we need to reach out and help and do good deeds towards and help them to know that, like, you know, there's good people out there and we don't have to be mean to each other. You know what I'm saying? Nobody really needs to be greedy and want more than someone else. And, you know, that's not necessary, because, like, at the end of the day, people are going to make sure that nobody else goes hungry. You know, anytime there's some kind of bad event in the earth or whatever, people come together real quick, no matter where, to try to help them. It's in our hearts. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. So, I agree with you 100%. Folks, you've been listening to Mad Science Show, and all I'm doing, I'm putting a call out. I want all the environmentalists out there, before you go to your next protest, come and talk to old Crazy Haired Chazez on one of the nights of the Round Table or the Mad Science Show. Before you all go out there and protest again for whatever problem is going on in the world. And those folks out there in Florida who's having the algae bloom problem, come over and talk to old Crazy Haired Chazez. Alright, if you find any problem that you got going on out there in this world and you're looking for a scientific solution or a little bit of common sense or somebody to help you troubleshoot it, come over and talk. Because I understand what's going on out there, and I understand that with you and me and that guy over there and that guy and that gal, and we put our brains together, there is nothing in this world that we can't resolve. And that's the reason why mad science exists. Until the common sense actually gets past, time period, you know, I think the lack of common sense will outlast radioactive depletion or deterioration of all the materials that you use in nuclear power plants. We need to get past that point. We need to get to a point where common sense rules the day, and basic science and basic physics, keep it simple. That's the only thing I'm trying to get to. I don't know. It's hard to deal with whenever you... I don't know everything that there is to know about everything that there is to know, but I'll tell you one thing's for doggone sure. I paid attention in science class, and most of the folks that come here did too. And if we can't find it, and you can't find it, then nobody can find it, and it probably doesn't even exist. But I'm going to tell you what, ever since this show started, when I think I've seen it all, somebody comes across something else. And even those free energy devices out there that people are trying to scam, those, you can learn something from those, because there was one part of that scam that they put together, not to mention the creativity of actually trying to hide a battery inside a machine or whatever, but they showed something inside there that made it seem plausible, and it's that one little plausible anomaly that I think you kind of touched on there a minute ago, Ted. But that one anomaly, in my view, is a missing piece of the puzzle, and all of them are worth looking at. Everything out there, when you talk about science and physics and mechanics and efficiency, I ain't overlooking nothing. Put it on the table, and we'll know we got it in our toolbox. So with that said, peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. Check us out on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. Take care.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.